using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Thursday, the 5th of August, year of our Lord 2021, day 509 of America held hostage and the world. Well, today we're going to take a look at more of what we've been looking at, the lockdown and the progression of all of this. But of course, we're going to take a look. A big part of this is the political hypocrisy. We have Mexico also suing U.S. gun makers for arming the drug cartels. That's where we're going to start with headline news. It was weakness when they caved on the Sandy Hook lawsuit, and now they smell blood in the water. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Yes, we have Mexico sees that the gun companies caved on the Sandy Hook lawsuit. They arrived at a settlement, even though they didn't have any liability. The gun companies didn't do anything wrong in Sandy Hook. They're not responsible for that. Any more than, as we've all made the simple analogy, if somebody gets drunk and kills someone with a car, does it maybe intentionally? As an act of terror, driving a car into a crowd, for example. You don't sue Ford or GM or whoever. But that's what the Democrats have done. And as a matter of fact, it's not only absurd, but that was seen coming for a long time. And so there's even a law on the books that you can't do that. That unless they are liable for faulty manufacturing of the gun, you know, if they make a gun and you pull the trigger and the thing blows up in your face, then you should be able to sue them. Unlike the vaccine manufacturers, of course, you know, they have no liability for anything. Not the design, not the manufacture, not the shipping of this thing. They don't have to ship it. We've got the military shipping it for them. We hold them harmless for anything. But yeah, the gun makers are held to a standard of liability that is as astounding as the standard of no liability is for the vaccine manufacturers. And so Mexico's now filed a lawsuit in U.S. court, did this yesterday, against Smith & Wesson, against Glock, Sturm, Ruger, and other major gun manufacturers, accusing them of contributing to gang violence south of the border. You know who they should sue? They should sue the federal government. They should sue the ATF. They should sue the U.N., Why do I say the U.N.? Well, you know, because it's the U.N. that is pushing the drug war, right? The drug war is a U.N. creation. It isn't even one of the stupid things that Richard Nixon did, and he did many stupid things. No, they had written that out in 1961, the schedule of four drugs. They put all the drugs in those schedules, and it first came to my attention when we had the first states pushing back against the prohibition of marijuana, which they put in as a Schedule 1, saying that it had absolutely no medical use. This is something that is dangerous, they said, something that is addictive. Neither of those are true. I don't recommend it because it's mind-altering, and I don't recommend anything that's mind-altering to people. But I also don't recommend prohibition because prohibition alters our society. It destroys our legal system. It corrupts our politicians. It corrupts our police. It increases violence. Just take a look at what happened with Al Capone, right? Did they sue Ford for Al Capone, his henchman, riding on the on the outside of the car, standing on the runners on the outside with a Tommy gun, shooting their competition? Because when you create prohibition, that's the way you deal with competition. You just kill them. You don't try to do a better job of creating a product. You just eliminate the competition with bullets. And that's what we've seen with this. So ultimately, their real beef is with the UN. And then closer to all of this, they should have a beef with the ATF. The ATF and its gun walking program. Remember that? That began in the Bush administration. Then it continued into the Obama administration. They were taking guns and trafficking them over the border, allegedly as a sting. It was a false flag event. What they were trying to do at the time was to create a justification for the next UN phase, which was a small arms treaty. They wanted to make sure that there was going to be absolute control of small arms going across borders. How do you do that? Well, you have to have, they said, the ability to track every single firearm. So you have to register every single firearm. You see how they use the crisis of the UN drug war to then back into a solution, you know, crisis solution. You got 9/11, so what do we have to do? Well, we got to shut down all liberty around airplanes. We've got to create a police state around airplanes. And now they're expanding that again with the other part, the other shoe has dropped of 9/11, and that is the dark winter simulation, the anthrax attack and so forth. That's what we've seen this last year. But they always create a problem, a false flag operation that's being done by the government, and then they offer you the solution, which is give up your freedom. A police state, a surveillance state, that's the solution to everything that they do. And that was the solution that they were offering as part of the disaster that they were creating with the Gunwalker program and with Fast and Furious. So by the time they got to the Obama administration, this thing that had been going on for several years as a Gunwalker program run by the ATF, it blew up in their face when a federal employee got killed, right? Law enforcement officer. Then it blew up, and everybody got really angry about it. But there'd already been a lot of people that had been killed with these guns that had been run into Mexico by our own government. So if they want to get to the root of the problem, instead of just grabbing some cash, that's what they would do. And then they could grab some cash maybe by suing the U.S. government, suing the U.N. But no, they'll go after the gun manufacturers. And quite frankly, you know, this is something that, again, blood in the water. When you try to appease these people, it only shows weakness. It never satisfies them. Mexico says the lawsuit has only one gun store. Well, that's ignoring what Bush and Obama and the ATF did for all those years. Mexico has called gun companies' tactics reckless. Well, they didn't call the BATF reckless. They didn't call Bush or Obama reckless, did they? Yeah. And which brings us to Biff. David Chipman. What a disgusting individual this guy is that Biden has tapped to run the ATF. A guy who has a disgusting history at the ATF itself, who has, since he left the agency, has worked for Bloomberg's gun control agencies, they might as well be agencies, his organizations. And this article from the Daily Caller says that Senate Judiciary Republicans sat on the ATF nominee's racism charges for nearly 2 months, show the records. Well, what about his history of attacking the Second Amendment and gun ownership in general? Isn't that enough? I mean, do we have to call him a racist? Well, yeah, unfortunately, that shows the true state of where we are in this country today. You can kill people in nursing homes like Cuomo did, but don't have any sexual harassment charges against you. You can defy the Constitution and the right to keep and bear arms, but do not be accused of racism. And the Republicans in defense are saying, well, you know, we just thought it was bad optics to start calling him racist. Why would they say that? I mean, that's what the left is doing to everybody. Every political opponent that they don't like, they call racist. So why not use that tactic against them? You know, that's one of the things that Saul Alinsky has to say. Yeah, I showed that picture, Travis, of David Chipman. Yeah, he actually does. Every time you see him, he looks angry and disturbed. And he looks amazingly like Biff. It's absolutely incredible. We have a congressional staff, Jennifer Massey, weighs in on Twitter's enlistment of AP and Reuters to serve as fact-checkers. She says this will accelerate Twitter's fondness for censorship. So good. Yeah, let's do that. Let's have more censorship by Twitter, because it's not enough what we have right now. And we're going to have AP and Reuters. Now, you know, AP has been censoring speech for quite some time. AP has put out their style rules, right? For example, you don't call somebody pro-life. You call them anti-abortion rights, and on and on. I've talked about that many times. And now they've got a long list of acceptable terms, right? You don't call somebody an illegal alien, even though even the Democrats are trying to dance around that during the debates. You know, we need to change the law so that these people are not, oh, I can't call them illegal when they come here, right? Well, if, you know, you got to change the law, that means that they are illegal. You can call them an alien, or you can call them a foreigner. Maybe foreigner would be better as they start to roll out this this UFO stuff that they're pulling on us next. But we know exactly where this is going to go. AP and Reuters have not been checking facts. They've been checking your language and your pronouns. And then this statement on that was pushed to me on Twitter for some reason. I don't know why. I guess they just wanted to get it in my face. This is put up by somebody whose account says the Party for Socialism and Liberation. And when I first saw that, I thought it said pray for socialism. It's like, why would anybody pray? Certainly the socialists aren't going to pray for socialism. These communist radicals don't believe in God. So that pray for socialism. But anyway, no, it's a Party for Socialism. And they said the highest estimates for the total number of rent debt owed by people facing evictions are about $60 billion. For context, that's less than 8% of the defense budget for 2021. Well, you know, the issue isn't even the money, right? It's not the money. Both the left and the right think the issue is always the money. The issue is, are you going to take away private property rights? And in the process, take away private property ownership. We know how this is going to work. Even if Biden were going to come out and say, well, you know, we've got unlimited amounts of money with the Federal Reserve. It's funny how they think there's absolutely no limits to money when it's something that they want to spend money on. But boy, they get really tight, don't they, when it's something that they don't want to fund? See, the money that they get from the Federal Reserve and this fiction that the debt doesn't matter. It was Keynesian economics. That's what they used to tell, the joke that they used to tell us when I took that in college. I was like, are you kidding me? They called it macroeconomics. Well, it was the big lie, was what it was. That the debt doesn't matter. It's money that you owe yourself. So national debt doesn't matter. That's a fundamental idea behind Keynesian economics. These guys, these court jesters who give your dictators the excuses, the lies to do whatever they want to do. And so we knew that wasn't true, but boy, they really doubled down and increased that now, just like they have the debt. They now call it MMT, Modern Monetary Theory. I call it the Magic Money Tree, because that's really a better description of what it is. They just pull out some of these court jester intellectuals and wave their hands over it and say, see, it doesn't matter. Abracadabra. You have all the money in the world, except when it comes to something that they don't want to give money to. And let me tell you something. If that were the total that everybody is behind, I can guarantee you, because we've already seen this movie last year, when they started shutting down Main Street, and then Trump came in and said, well, we're going to help these people that we just told were not essential. And so we're going to do the PPP. You know, we're going to have Payroll Protection Plan. Well, that really wasn't set up to help the businesses anyway, but they had the CARES Act and so forth. More than 50% of the money went to 5% of the companies, and those companies were not even small businesses. They redefined a small business instead of a business that has fewer than 500 employees to be a business that has fewer than 500 employees at one location, which meant that all the Wall Street big boxes were entitled to the money. Trump's hotels were entitled to the money, and you had the small businesses getting nothing. And let me tell you, if they put in some compensation for rent and back mortgages, it's all going to go to the big banks. It's all going to go to BlackRock, and they're going to use it to bankrupt the middle class, just like they did last year under Trump. So that's not even a legitimate argument. It's all going to go to the banks and BlackRock. who are buying up all the property. Google has now demonetized Piers Morgan for criticizing Simone Biles, the athlete. I haven't even covered that. I don't even care anymore about the Doe Olympics. Unbelievable. It's the self-parody. I mean, it is kind of nice to watch the transgender weightlifter and the people who hated America so much go down in flames. And there was one young athlete who was praising God and loving America at the same time. Imagine that, how those two things go together. While Megan Rapinoe and all these other people are just going down in one defeat after the other, humiliating defeats as they are going through the contests. So there's something about that. There's a little bit of dark joy in watching the Olympics. Only one person I've seen that I could get behind, and that was that young woman who, I don't even know what her sport was. I just saw the clip of it. But anyway, Piers Morgan, everybody got all upset because, you know, one of these athletes walked away from the competition. She said, oh, it was just bothering her. So he commented and he said, sorry, Simone, but there's nothing heroic or brave about quitting because you're not having fun. You let down your teammates, your fans, and your country. I don't even know what sports she did. So she didn't let me down. I really don't care. All of these people, by the way, you notice how many of the people on the left now, even though you know, they hate nationalism, boy, they really get into it with the Olympics, don't they? Except really this time, it's really been more the International Brotherhood of LGBT that they're cheering for. But because he had that to say, I mean, does that seem to be really, really hateful to you? No, I don't think so at all. But that was the basis. I mean, Piers Morgan went down for some irrelevant comment like that. He didn't go down for standing up for individual liberty or trying to protect people's lives or anything important. He went down because he criticized and got involved in some spat about an Olympic brat, essentially. And so what they did was, he used to be, I think, the editor of the Daily Mail. Maybe he still is. But he's got a column on the Daily Mail that he writes. And so Google, at first I saw that, I thought, wow, they demonetized the Daily Mail for ads, right? Because that's the way most of the big people on the internet, and that's the way they make their money, is by monetizing ads when people go to their site. And I thought, did they demonetize the entire site because of one comment that he had? No, what they did was they demonetized his particular column. Do you see how that works? Do you see how they're setting up the social credit system? They can drill down to the individual, as they have with me. I mean, you can look for David Knight. It used to be that I would come up on Google. I don't anymore. It used to be I would come up before a guy with my same name who does motocross or something in the UK and retired many years ago. But it doesn't anymore. And it wasn't because I'm no longer at InfoWars. That happened long before I left. It happened because I was there, frankly. But they got my number, so they purged me 7 different times off of YouTube. I had 7 accounts that I set up there. And I'm not going to bother anymore, quite frankly. Anybody that goes to YouTube to find information, they're probably a hopeless case anyway at this point. But no, they can drill down to the individual in their search engines, not just on YouTube. And that's what they're doing. And that's what they're going to do. They're going to get very specific about it. We have the C2PA. That is the looking for content and also looking at the provenance. That means the chain of ownership. That's the coalition that's been put together ostensibly by Microsoft. But, of course, they're acting on behalf of the police state, their surveillance state behind them. They're the, they work as a partnership. Microsoft is the public-private face of all that. So you can't complain about it being done. You know, if you had the federal government directly taking ownership of this, if we saw the CIA and the NSA coming together with hardware providers, CPU providers like Intel and like ARM, if they got them together, if they got the software content creators together like Adobe and others to stamp whatever it is that you're creating, having the hardware, the CPU stamp it, having the software stamp it, and then getting together with the big establishment media to say, well, we're going to be the ones to identify what is not the official narrative, and then you people who have the hardware and the software can stamp it so we can stamp it out. Now, if that was being done by the CIA and the NSA, some people would have a problem with it, just like they did Total Information Awareness when it was being put out by Homeland Security. And then they shut it down. And the next day, you had Facebook appear. Very next day. Just a coincidence, I'm sure. But if that were being done, you know, by the government, but it's being done by Microsoft, and so that's all just fine. Not a problem at all. And that's what this is going to look like. You know, they'll mark somebody just like Google has marked Piers Morgan on Daily Mail, marked his column, and you will not be able to say anything or put anything out on the internet. They will shut you down. Not that I miss Piers Morgan or I want to hear anything that he has to say, but I miss free speech. And that's what we should all stand together for. The $1 trillion infrastructure bill has now hit a snag. They've had 300 amendments nearly. I think the exact count is 281 amendments as of 5 p.m. on Tuesday. And so you've got in several instances, senators are holding their colleagues' amendments hostage by objecting to voting on them unless their own priorities are also guaranteed a vote. Do you see how this works? This is something that's really pretty old. One of the ways that we got such a big deficit under Reagan was that in general, Reagan and Tip O'Neill came to an agreement that Reagan would rubber stamp the welfare state spending and Tip O'Neill would rubber stamp the warfare spending. And that's what we're seeing right here. You know, I'll vote for your spending, you vote for my spending. We don't have to worry about the accounting of any of this stuff because now we got magic money trees everywhere, right? Got the big magic money tree right there at the Federal Reserve. So what they're saying now is probably going to be Saturday before there's a vote on the final passage. Now, when you look at what's happening with this infrastructure bill, you have $110 billion for roads and bridges. Well, that sounds like infrastructure. You have $66 billion for passenger and freight rail. So now we're starting to get away from it a little bit, in my opinion. Those things ought to be private. $39 billion for public transit. Getting a little bit further away. $55 billion for water infrastructure. Okay, so you total all that stuff up. That's kind of what you would expect from an infrastructure bill. That's kind of real infrastructure. That's $270 billion. Remember, this is over $1 trillion for this infrastructure bill. So we're looking at 27%. What is the other 73% funding? Well, you don't want to ask, do you? And it's going to get even crazier once they look at these 300 amendments. They also throw in $65 billion for broadband, which, again, I don't support. You know, one of the things I think that's interesting, I didn't mention this the other day when I talked about how bloated and inefficient and corrupt the money that governments have put into infrastructure has already been shown to be. But just a good example here for this particular show, we would not be able to do this show from here. I don't know if we'd be able to do it if we had to hire, you know, get an office or something like that. But we have a few years ago, the internet here was so unbelievably bad. It was just a crawl above dial-up speeds back in the 90s. And then it disappeared whenever it rained, it would just disappear. And it could be gone for a very long time, you know, or if the wind blew or whatever. It was crazy. So we had a neighbor who knew how to put this stuff together and said, all right, that's it. You know, I can't put up with this anymore. I'm going to do my own. And he did his own and put up some signs in the neighborhood. We contacted them and gave them a try, and they have been spot on. As a matter of fact, knew who I was, were listeners, and they've really helped us to have the bandwidth here. That was all done by an individual, an entrepreneur, who put his own money at risk, and he made something that worked. And that's exactly the opposite of what we're seeing with these big broadband bills, massive amounts of money being thrown corruptly at people who don't get the job done. It's one of the reasons why when you look at how expensive roads are in the first place, it's because it becomes so bloated with people who are just, they don't know what they're doing, they don't care what they're doing, and neither do the politicians. It's just a way to recycle money through. These people donate to the politicians so they can get elected, and then the politicians throw contracts back at them as a thank you. That's the way the system works. That's why we can't have nice things anymore. But again, you know, it was just they've done a great job. I really appreciate that. But when we look at, and even if we throw in this 5G thing, $65 billion, that takes us up to $335 billion. Still, only a third of this infrastructure bill. What is in the other two-thirds? Well, you don't really want to know, do you? Who knows if we'll find out, because they've already got, it's already 2,700 pages. And so it's going to get bigger once they put these things through. Now, some of the bills that are there, of course, are not going to make it, like Marsha Blackburn's border wall amendment. She wants to put the border wall into the infrastructure bill. She said if Joe Biden truly cared about infrastructure, he would build a wall at our southern border. I would say even better, if he truly cared about travel restrictions, and we'll be talking about that. You know, he's going to make it mandatory to have a vaccine for people to come fly into this country. Meanwhile, they don't care. They don't test people who are coming across the border illegally. They don't vaccinate them. And then they put them in planes and buses and ship them all over the country. Right? I mean, the hypocrisy is absolutely stunning with all of this. So if he cared about the so-called pandemic, he would do something differently about the border. But instead, Biden spent hundreds of millions of dollars not to build a wall and to allow illegal aliens to flood into our country, she said. Ron Johnson will also propose a similar amendment prohibiting the cancellation of contracts on the wall. Because you got one guy who's put in about $30 million to build the wall. He's been left unpaid. And when you look at that, again, what was I saying just then about how ridiculous the amounts of money are that we're spending on things? Why do you have to spend, he only did 3 miles, why do you have to spend $10 million a mile on a wall? And we've already seen that these walls, just as predicted, would not keep people away from coming in. So he's trying to get some money back, so he's asking if anybody wants to buy it. I look at that, I thought, what is this? Is this another one of these deals like London Bridge? You know, London Bridge back in the 1960s was bought by a developer in Arizona as they were tearing it down, or as it was falling down, as the song goes, I guess. It was falling down. And they were going to build a new London Bridge, I guess, at the time. The London Bridge that I've seen was the new one, and it's really pretty cool. It has, they used steel in its construction that had colors embedded in it. That's pretty neat. But anyway, very nice looking. But anyway, he wanted the original one that was built back in 1830. There's been a lot of different London Bridges. You know, back in the Middle Ages, they had people would have houses and everything else like that on London Bridge. But anyway, the one that from the 1830s, he bought in 1968. He brought it to Arizona, and he was building a community, and there was a lake there. And so he thought, ah, it'd be cool. I could, you know, put London Bridge across the lake. It's only really used as a veneer. They just brought over some granite pieces and put them on as a veneer. So it's just a facelift job, which is the way most of this stuff operates. But anyway, I guess maybe that's what he's thinking. Maybe somebody, you know, who can buy my wall? Maybe you can take the Trump wall on a tour. It's only 3 miles. I mean, it's not that big. You know, it's like Trump said, we're going to have a big, beautiful wall, and we're going to have a big, beautiful door. It's going to go through that wall so people can come through. We just, you know, make sure we know who they are, you know. Well, that's about a 3 mile wall, about a 2,000 mile door is what he's got. It went the other way. And that brings me to a letter that I just got from someone from Naples, Italy. And they sent this, let's see, I got this yesterday. He says, I understand your dislike of Trump. You've opened my eyes to some of the failures I hadn't seen before. I was incredibly bewildered and angry that he shut the economy down over a flu. Yep, that's right. And we knew where this was headed. We knew well before, as people were suggesting that something like this should be done. You know, I started fighting this 2 months before. I said, you look at what's happening in China. Then when it happened in Italy, I said, don't do this. They're all saying, we've got to do this. We must shut it down. So it was not a surprise to me. It's a disappointment that it happened. Anyway, the founders were certainly no strangers to deadly outbreaks, he said, of disease. But I never noticed anything in the Constitution which suspends the Bill of Rights in case of some emergency. Exactly right. And oh, by the way, when you suspend the Bill of Rights, it makes it really hard to get it back, doesn't it? As we're finding out on a daily basis. Trump should have told everyone that we die sooner or later and life goes on. He should have fired Fauci on day one. Yes, he should have, and I'll add, as I've said before, he should have led by that with that message. He should have had the Republican convention openly. He should not have turned the election into a lockdown mail-in election because we all knew how that was going to go. When he did that, he essentially turned the election over to the other side. He says, but I have to say that I voted for Trump mostly because I wanted to see a wall built, and I'm still shocked that we can print trillions of dollars for a fake pandemic, and I would say, and a fake infrastructure bill, as you just see here, because only one-third of it is even stuff that we could say is legitimate, even under the stretched terms of legitimacy, infrastructure. But we couldn't come up with $20 billion for a wall. Think about that. Trillion dollars, but not the $20 billion for a wall. I know he wasn't perfect, but I've never seen a politician attempt so many different ways to deliver on a campaign promise. That doesn't excuse the lockdown and many other failures, but I sure wish we had the wall right now. Let me just say this about his attempts to deliver on the wall. A good example of this is what happened with DACA. Another example is happening right now with Biden in terms of the CDC eviction moratorium and extending that, even though the Supreme Court, you had five of the justices say, and you had five courts before the Supreme Court had said there is no authority for the CDC to put in an eviction moratorium. Nevertheless, Biden does not want to take the political heat from his side, so he punts it over to the Supreme Court to let them do it. And even the Supreme Court didn't want to take the heat. Kavanaugh didn't want to take the heat. So he said, well, they don't have the legal authority, but I'm going to let them because they're going to shut it down another month. And I said at the time, they're not going to shut it down another month. And now they're saying we're going to extend it for another 2 months. So now the hot potato goes back into the lap of the Supreme Court. What do they care? They're there for life. No, they care very much about what people think about them and say about them. And so what Trump did with DACA was essentially the same thing. DACA was an executive order from the previous administration. There's no way that the current president does not have the authority to get rid of any and all executive orders that were put in there by previous presidents. And yet, he kicked this hot potato. You know, he wanted to tell his people that he was going to get rid of DACA, but he didn't want to take the political heat, just like Biden doesn't want to take the heat for ending the CDC moratorium, which began under Trump, by the way. The attack on private property rights. And when you come to the wall, it was the same thing. Trump wanted to tell his people, hey, build the wall, but you know, I can't get the money from Congress and so forth and so on. I said from the very beginning, if you remember, going back to 2017, I was saying, if you're really serious about this, you can kill two birds with one stone. You said you're going to bring the troops home from Afghanistan, Iraq, you should. And you put them on our border instead of protecting the borders of other countries. You build military bases near the border. You just have the presence of troops there. They don't have to. It wouldn't be a dangerous duty. It would just be a deterrent. It would be a deterrent, just like the Second Amendment is a deterrent to government tyranny. You have the troops are going to be there, and there would be a bigger deterrent than a wall. A wall is very easy to tunnel under, to climb over. As we have seen, it doesn't matter if you spend $10 million a mile on it. It's still easy to defeat. So you put the troops there, and that would make it a lot more difficult. Nothing is going to be 100% perfect, but it would make it a lot more difficult if you wanted that policy. And he could have done two things at once. He was the commander-in-chief of the military. But again, nobody wants to actually do anything once they get into office. And that's true of both Republicans and Democrats. They will campaign on something, and then when they get in, it's like the Democrats are not as bad as the Republicans. The Democrats actually will implement some of their policies. Republicans never do. They don't want to take the heat. And they're really fake opposition. Anyway, the writer goes on to say, anyway, to my question, I often hear folks like you warn that we're being intentionally baited into a violent civil war and not to take the bait. It's pretty easy to see your point of view, and I empathize with the desire to fight back through peaceful means. But has any society ever come back from tyranny peacefully? Like you, I have children, and I do not thirst for blood, but I don't see it happening, and I can't find an example in history. I can, however, think of several occasions in history when freedom was purchased through other than peaceful means. You're fond of our founders. Jefferson saw the future when he spoke about the Tree of Liberty being refreshed, in my opinion. He said it has to be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants, the Tree of Liberty. It seems that we're past the point of a peaceful path back to liberty already. Well, let me just say this. When it comes to violence, and actually Karen called me out on it the other day, because I had somebody say, did you actually say that the people around there ought to attack those German cops who are beating that woman on the ground? Yes, and I stand by that. I don't support using force or fraud, initiating that to achieve social or political goals. You know, that was something that used to be, when I was involved with the Libertarian Party, that was something that used to be a statement. They called it the non-aggression principle. And you would sign that as a condition of party membership, or certainly as being a candidate. They got rid of that, by the way. Not that they are suggesting that we actually stand up for liberty. I guess maybe they just wanted to move further away from that. If you see somebody beating someone on the sidewalk, it made me so angry to see, I think it was an Asian woman attacked by a black man in New York, and then they had a camera set up in the lobby. They showed the silhouettes of some security guards there. They had equipment. They could have done something. And they just stood there watching it happen as this guy is beating the woman on the sidewalk. And that was outrageous. You know, when do we get to the situation that you don't try to stand up for people who are innocently being attacked? And it doesn't matter if instead of a freelance thug attacking somebody because of racial animus or because he wanted her purse or whatever his motivation was, it doesn't matter whether these people are doing it because they're just following orders. And they don't get a pass because they're wearing a costume. And the point I was making was we had a lot of people there at that, not we, but they had a lot of people there in Germany. Why are they standing by and watching this? Because they're each making the calculation that I'm not going to put my life at risk to help somebody else. We've become that as a society, and that's why we have the society that we see right now. Was that the attitude of the soldiers at Valley Forge? Was that the attitude of the people at the Alamo or at Goliad? No. They put their lives at risk. Why? It doesn't make any sense. If you get killed at the Alamo, how are you going to enjoy any freedom, right? They had a longer view of this. They weren't doing it for glory. They were doing it for their children. They didn't want their children living as slaves. And they had a longer view. They had an eternal view. This was when America was a Christian country. I don't know if that's the motivation of each and every one of these guys. But they had the opportunity to leave and they chose not to go. Now, when I look at that, I think these are people who are saying there's something other than this short period of time on this earth. You know, you need to understand that your life is just a breath. Over and over again, as the Bible points out, you know, we're like the grass of the field or the flowers that are here one day and gone the next. And so what is it that you want to... Who is it that you're responsible to? Who is it that you want to please? Do you want to be remembered? You're not going to be remembered. Even if you do something heroic, like the Alamo, you're going to have people reinvent the history. They're going to tear that down. You don't do it for glory. You simply do it for your kids. So when we look at this, and we look at when is this justified, I say, when we look at this... Are there societies that have come back from tyranny? Yes. Peacefully? Yes. There are. You know, you can look at the situation with Gandhi, and you can say, well, he was operating against Great Britain, which at the time had free speech, had a Christian conscience, and so forth. And so, you know, that type of tactic doesn't work too well in the Soviet Union under Stalin. And yet, we see that that society was taken down after 72 years, about like... The fourth turning, they say about every 80 years. You know, it was 1917 when they had the revolution to 1989 when the wall came down. That's when the Soviet Union started coming apart and being reorganized in a different way. And so when you look at that, it is possible to do that. if you look at what happened with East Germany, for example, now that was a society that was fully authoritarian and would be brutal. They would shoot people who tried to get over the wall. They had initiated these types of, it was kind of a slow creeping tyranny that began right after World War II. By 1948, they said, all right, we're going to just shut off Berlin, which was inside of East Germany. So America and others set up an airlift for a year. Finally, they relented on that. They allowed supplies to go in. But from 1949 until 1961, they had, still had people there, but people didn't like being there. And so they were crossing from East Germany into West Berlin and then getting a plane to leave. And before they put up the Berlin Wall, they had about 2,000 people a day making that journey, just walking across there, you know, just like people walk across the border into America from Mexico. They would walk in about 2,000 people a day. And it was a lot of people that they really needed. People who knew how to do things, who could easily get a job. It was people who were educated, trained in skills, and so forth. And so that's why they put up the wall. The wall stayed there from 61 until 89. Why did it end? It ended because people got fed up with it. It ended because of peaceful resistance, as I've said before. It ended when people started going, meeting on a regular basis, and they started meeting around a church, you know, several churches. And the crowd started getting bigger and bigger as they talked about freedom and liberty. And then one day, they get a crowd of a few thousand people carrying candles and things like that and singing Christian songs, and they go to the Berlin Wall and get into the area where they normally would have been shot, and the soldiers didn't have the heart to shoot them because they were sick of the system as well. Now, when we look at where we are right now, we're looking at a new Dark Ages that is going to be reinforced by technology like we've never seen before. That's why it is so imperative what we do right now. Because if they put this system in, this technocratic Dark Age that Zbigniew Brzezinski talked about, that Prince Bernhard and, you know, Lord Peter Carrington with Bilderberg that they desired to have, that the other Nazi Klaus Schwab wants to have, that Gates wants to have, that Soros wants to have, if we let these people put in the society that they've been bragging about and talking about since World War II. And again, look at what, you know, the place where they put Bilderberg, the very last place where the Nazis had their final victory there at the Bridge Too Far. The movie, it's a bad movie. It's a slow-paced movie. But, you know, you can watch the movie, The Bridge Too Far, find out about that. But it was right there, the Bilderberg Hotel, right there where the Nazis had their last victory. It was 10 years to the day after that victory against Operation Market Garden. Peter Carrington, who was British, was the guy that held up the tanks to for them, the troops were trapped, to make sure they had the victory. You had Prince Bernhard, which everybody believed was a double agent for the Nazis. So the two of them put together Bilderberg there. And it was Bilderberg where they started planning the European Union, and where they talked about having a common currency, the EU, for the first time. So these people have been looking to build a worldwide dominance. You want to see who's in charge of the EU for the most part, who has the most clout? Was the Germans, Merkel, and these others. You know, what they were able to achieve by economic union and by rules and by laws, you know, these same people, these Nazis, like Bernhard, like Merkel, who came from East Germany, they were able to put in a system that they had always dreamed of. And now you got Klaus Schwab doing it on a global level. So we could have a Third Reich, after all, and it could be supported by very, very advanced technology. And we could go into a new Dark Age that could last a very, very long time before people are able to either have the guts to oppose this, and that's the danger. And this is what I see right now. The key is that we have to oppose this before they get this locked into place. That's why I was posing it 2 months before they locked it in, before the lockdown. Once this solidifies into position, once they continue to establish their invasion, their strongholds on different aspects of our life, and they're doing that on a daily basis. If we do not oppose this, if we allow them to establish the system and then start to apply their technological advantages, we will have a dark age that will last for generations. And it will require a lot of blood to take that back. But first, people have to want their freedom. And that's really where the fight lies. And if you go back and you look at what happened with the founding fathers, you had people creating a legitimate government. They had a constitutional Congress. They had a continental Congress. They had an organized regular army. It would have served them better if they'd had a guerrilla warfare, but they did a regular army. Same thing happened with the Civil War. You had the Confederate States create a constitution, a government, an army, uniforms, all this other kind of stuff, flags, a whole bit, you have to have, though, a political structure that's going to give people a reason for doing this, and you have to have leaders who understand what they're doing, who have principles that they can articulate, unlike Trump, and who have principles that they will stick to, unlike Trump. And that's why I say, when I push back against people, who are people like Flynn, who are pushing this, or Pachinik, or even Alex Jones, who are pushing, let's take this country back, right, by force. Well, you don't have a leader. I'm not going to lift a finger. I'm not going to march in line behind Donald Trump. You better believe I'm not. I don't support that son of a gun. He is a traitor. He is a Benedict Arnold. And you better have somebody who understands liberty, who can articulate it, who has principles that they will stick to. Trump won't even stick to his own wives. This is a man of no character. He always was. He's a grifting billionaire. So find somebody with character. Find somebody who will set up a new principles, who are going to define this, who are going to say, hey, we're not going to have medical mandates. We're going to go back to the founding principles. If you don't have somebody like that, you don't have a reason to fight. And so that's why I focus on the local. And we're going to have, by the way, joining us in this program, we're going to have Vince Agnelli. I'm not sure. Is he coming up in the second or third hour, Travis? Anyway, he's going to be joining us. And do you know if he's coming up second or third hour? Okay. All right. He's checking it here. Vince will be joining us. We're going to be talking about local solutions. And we need to have each other's backs. We need to be looking at what we're going to do in terms of living our lives, because they're going to be locking us down. It's not going to be the end of our life. I was just saying to Karen the other day, I said, we look at all the different silver linings that have come from what they've done this last year. We look at, for example, our kids first, and the fact that when they locked everything down, these people who have been attacking homeschooling on the basis, well, your kids aren't properly socialized. They don't have enough contact with other kids, which is not true. Homeschooling kids had contact with other kids. They had contact with adults, more so than these other kids did. So, they were properly socialized. But that was always the attack. And then this last year, they just made a mockery of all that by locking everything down and saying, you're going to just stay locked into your house, which is what they accused homeschoolers of doing. It wasn't true, but they did it to everybody. So that was a silver lining. But I said, the other part of this is that we don't have a leader who's going to come in and say to Pharaoh, let my people go, and then take the people out of Egypt. But I look at this, and I think the silver lining of us being kicked out of this disgusting legal cultural system that we now call America, or even Western society in other countries, right, with its Sodom and Gomorrah Hollywood movie studios and everything. I mean, now we can't even go to movies. The movie studios have been bankrupt. The movie theaters have been bankrupted. And, people are still watching a lot of content at home, but it's put a kink into all of that. It's one way for God to really just kind of force us out of this society that we would not voluntarily leave. It's been my experience that that's the way that God operates. I think that's a biblical understanding of what God does. He will protect his people, even if we don't like it. And I've seen that God has made life more difficult for me and for other Christians to make us follow him and trust him. And I think that's what's coming. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
the common man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Past to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.
Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
And the sweet sounds of Motown. Find them on the Oldies channel at APSradio.com.
All right. And I've got a little bit more news here I want to cover before we get into the toxic medicine, before we get into America and the rest of the world held hostage. And I just want to give an update for some of the correspondence that we've had. We had, as I pointed out yesterday, someone had contacted me and said for some reason they only had three people that they paid on Zelle, and I disappeared. They tried to re-add me. They said, you've already got this email address in there. And so they were having problems and asked if we'd been kicked off by Zelle. I hadn't seen anybody contribute the previous day, but we did have someone contribute yesterday. Thank you, Chan. Appreciate that on Zelle. So it looks like we're still in business. I had looked, and it appeared that everything was – I didn't contact my bank, but it appeared that everything – was still there in terms of me being on Zelle. So apparently that hasn't hit yet. I also have a question here from, and this is from Thailand, getting people listening all over the world, but this is a person with an English name, so I'm assuming that a lot of these people are American expats that are contacting me from Europe as well as Asia. Anyway, he says, I'd like to look at your shows as far back as 2019. I'm not able to find them even on Rumble. Any suggestions, Charlie? I would just say that on Rumble, I have not been given David Knight Show. It's actually not the, but it was David Knight Show. So if you go to Rumble and you look for my show, Rumble is kind of weird in the sense that it comes up by default that you're going to search for channels. And then you have to change that to search for videos. Now, if you search for videos, then you will find me, because the video that my channel does not have David Knight in the name. The channel that is named David Knight Show has been kept by Alex. He will not return. He will not turn that over to me. It doesn't matter. I've got more subscribers on the other one than I would, but I might have had more subscribers if people could find me by my name than I do now on Rumble. So it's still pretty small. I don't get a lot of views on Rumble, but it is Roundtable Report on Rumble, which is where we're putting content up now. But even the old channel that I don't have control of, that's in my name, even the old channel doesn't go back any earlier than November of 2020. So it's not a very long archive there. You will, however, find the archives, although I think it can be a little bit cumbersome to go back on it, but you'll find the archives on BitChute. I've been there a long time. And so there's archives there that are going back to 2019 and earlier on BitChute if you want to find them. By the way, we had a lot of problems yesterday for people trying to watch the broadcasts. We had problems on multiple channels, especially BitChute. BitChute, we still have not been able to get the full show up. We split the full show up, and we try to put it up in pieces. And so yesterday we had it in two parts. The first part was 2 hours long. The second part was 1 hour long, because we used to be able to get two-hour shows up reliably. But the two-hour part, part one, never went up. Two of the four cuts that we took out of the show didn't go up yesterday on BitChute. And a lot of them did not go up on huge tube until later in the day as well. So I apologize if you're looking for that stuff. We were able to get everything up on Odyssey yesterday. Okay. So I don't know. Different platforms are having different issues. I mean, that's the one thing. YouTube has the money to make their system work really well. But they're just too controlling. And there's no way that we can operate there. So again, if you want to find the archives, you can find them at BitChute. Please be patient with us. It's not anything that we have any control over. We can get the things uploaded, and it will sit there cranking and cranking and cranking and never show up. It's just really frustrating, believe me, for us especially. The Hill has an op-ed piece, Coming Soon, America's Own Social Credit System. Who knew? Well, we all knew. I knew. I told everybody about it. It's not like I'm some kind of a prophet with a crystal or fortune teller or anything like that. They were telling people a couple of months before Trump locked everything down. They said, look at what China's able to do. It's really good. You know, that social credit system that they got, it's kind of creepy. But we need that for the pandemic. I said, that's what they're going to use the pandemic to implement. And it's exactly true. And so now The Hill is telling you that. And so the new domestic war on terror, kicked off by the riot of January the 6th, has prompted several web giants to unveil predecessors to what effectively could become a soft social credit system by the end of this decade. Well, first of all, it isn't going to take that long. And that's why, as I said in the previous segment, we got to oppose this right now. Because every day they're adding more and more tyrannical things, and the things that they've already had, they're locking those down and they're hardening in place. And they're hardening in place in terms of our being accustomed to it. It's a gradual process of acclimation to this tyranny. We must oppose it now, or it will be too late. And that means getting the information out to people. Do your own reports. Push my stuff out. Push other people's stuff out. But do this now. Even I know that we've got censorship. I know we've got canceling. But if you don't do it now, it's only going to be worse next week. Next month, next year, it's going to be a lot worse. Now you've got a better opportunity than you're going to have in the future if we don't pull this thing back. So go all out right now, trying to push out the content and the information to people to try to change their minds, get them to understand what is coming. It is happening so fast, I don't believe that people can't see this. I was a conspiracy theorist when I said this last year. I was attacked by these mainstream media people saying, look at this, David Knight is saying it's a, you know, they had me and several other people, it wasn't just me. I said, look at all these people, and they mentioned me as well, saying this is a medical martial law that's coming. That's exactly what it is. And I was saying it was going to be a social credit system. That's what it always was. It wasn't a conspiracy theory. It was always a conspiracy. It was an open conspiracy. They were open about it. They made it very clear it was their agenda, just as clear as the Great Reset is made clear. You're going to own nothing, you'll be happy about it. I mean, that's the phrase that everybody's picked up on now. I'm glad they have. But there's a lot of other things that they said as part of that that were open. And they've been conspiring to do this for the longest time with all these globalist confabs that they have. You know, every couple of months there's another one. You know, it's not just Bilderberg, it's not just Davos. They've got a lot of these that they're constantly doing and constantly talking about what it is that they want to do. And let me just say this. This new domestic war on terror is not something that began with January the 6th. The new domestic war on terror was always the objective, going back to September 11th, 2001. And it wasn't just to create the Department of Homeland Security and the Patriot Act. They had also planned to do what they did this last year in 2020. They simulated it, the same people, Johns Hopkins, the CDC, all these people, they simulated it with Dark Winter 2 months before 9/11. The week after 9/11, you had the anthrax false flag attacks, and then 2 months later, you had the legislation that's pushed out to the states so it could be enacted at the state level without a constitutional court challenge. In the same way that they're rolling out and said they were going to roll out the vaccine mandates through corporations doing corporate coercion so they wouldn't have a constitutional challenge. This is the way these people operate. They know exactly what they're doing. They're not responding to any pandemic. They're not responding to a terrorist attack. Those are the ways that they usher this in. So it did not start with January the 6th. Quite frankly, it didn't even start with a lockdown. That was just an implementation of the plan that had been there for a long time. You could say that you know, that was the second shoe to drop with Trump's executive order for a national state of emergency, the money that was unleashed with that, the lockdown, the vaccines that he created that we knew were going to be mandated. And then you had people who were being led by the nose by people like Steve Pachenik. It's just amazing to me. That was such a pathetic lie, such an unbelievable lie from the very beginning. I rejected it. I said, I'm not going to be a part of this. There's absolutely no way that that was true. And yet I had people who argued with me through that whole period of time when Trump and Alex were raising money with a Stop the Steal. I was trying to stop the steal. They were stealing from you. They were stealing from the MAGA crowd. And that lead up into January the 6th. And even after all of that, even after the inauguration and everything, you had people still fighting me on social media and telling me that what Steve Pachenik said was true. And it's like, there's absolutely no way. There's no way. I mean, that was months ago that he said there was 20,000 troops out, and they'd already started arrests, and it was they had blockchain watermarked ballots that had been done secretly by the Trump administration. It was just garbage. And yet, Alex still had him on a regular basis. Why? Because, he throws these conspiracy theories out, and he does it not because he believes it. That's what it showed with Pachenik. He throws out these wild conspiracy theories because he wants to get an audience. There are real conspiracies out there. And it what it does when he throws out garbage like this, it inoculates the criminals from being exposed. Because people say, well, yeah, but you did all this QAnon stuff and you did all this Pachenik stuff. So, none of this stuff is real. He mixes the fake stuff with the real stuff to discredit the real stuff. Last week, PayPal announced a partnership with the Southern Poverty Law Center to investigate the role of white supremacists and propagators of anti-government. And so now even The Hill is talking about it. Meanwhile, we've got Mike Lindell, who is, in terms of talking about when Trump is going to be president again, right? He's now changed yet again the day and the month for when Trump will become president again. He and Pachenik and Flynn and the rest of these people will be bringing our findings to the Supreme Court in late August or early September, sometime after the cyber symposium ends. And it'll prove this was all an attack by China. I don't know if he's talking about the so-called pandemic or the lockdown. Of course, they're one and the same thing. Trump threw the election by putting in the pandemic that wasn't necessary. But don't let that bother you. Just continue on with your hero worship. He says, I gave my predictions about August, and that was several months ago. That was an estimation of the time, but it took longer to get this symposium set up. However long it takes for the Supreme Court to take it up and decide on this, I can't predict that. I'm not the Supreme Court. Let me predict that the Supreme Court won't even listen. The Supreme Court never even considered that. None of these courts ever even considered any of the evidence of a rigged election. I mean, very different if you look at it from the 2000 election that was focused there in Palm Beach, where they threw a county, that threw the state, that threw the Electoral College. And so it all came down to that one corrupt county, and they looked at it, the Supreme Court looked at it, but they're not going to do that this time around. They're not. They're not going to pay attention to any of this stuff. So that'll be the next thing he's complaining about. But just understand, these people are jousting at windmills for a fake leader that doesn't have any principles, doesn't have any integrity, doesn't have any ideas. He's completely devoid of everything. The one thing that I thought we'd get from Trump, which might have been useful, I thought, he's enough of a rogue. Of course, we didn't want Hillary, and that was what Julian Assange said. Julian Assange said, well, we know that Hillary is, he called her Hillary. we know that Hillary is... she's a criminal, and she's a murderer. We don't know what Trump is, so we'll just have to wait and see. Well, now Julian Assange and the rest of us know what Trump is. I guess when we're predicting when Trump is going to come back, we should ask Alex Jones, because he predicted to the day and time when President Trump was going to pardon Julian Assange. Oh, yeah, InfoWars is always right? never going to hear mea culpa about that either. So when we look at this, we need to don't put your trust in men. Don't put your trust in political parties. Don't think that Washington can be saved. Look at how you can save yourself from Washington. While they were asleep, their Teslas burned in the garage. It's a risk that many automakers are taking seriously. This is another battery fire that burned down a house, and this isn't anything new. This was happening a decade ago at the time, that was before Tesla. There were Nissan Leafs. You know, that was the Nissan. Maybe they still make it. I don't know. The Nissan, yeah, look at that fire. Absolutely amazing. Nothing burns like a battery fire. those could be some very effective weapons if we descend into total effective chaos. Anyway, this truly is a metaphor for America. While we are asleep, the things that they have sold us, that they have subsidized, are burning down our house. burning down the house. I should have played that. Yeah, this is, I think that's a metaphor, if nothing else, for America. Speaking of the house burning down, the vote to recall Gavin Newsom. Did you know that Bruce Jenner is now bankrupt? He's like 150, his campaign is now, he's not personally bankrupt, I don't think his campaign is. $150,000 in debt, no money is coming in. Who knew? That's a hopeful sign, actually. The GOP has not descended into total absurdity, circus freak election, embracing that. It was so pathetic to see Sean Hannity kowtowing to that. It's just, anyway. But now the vote to recall Gavin Newsom. How is that looking? And what does that look like? I was kind of surprised when I looked at this because they said the vote to remove Gavin Newsom is within a margin of error. So I thought, well, why aren't they talking about, you know, who is close to beating him, for example? This is the way it works. On September the 14th, they will have the recall election. Voters will be asked two questions. First one is, do you want to recall him, yes or no? If the yes, the recall, wins, then the second question, if more than 50% of the voters say yes, just a simple majority, then they will say, who should replace him? And they said that's where the thing where it gets strange, because there is no limit to the number of candidates who can run or who can replace an official on a recall ballot. And I think that, you know, if you have more than 50% of the people say that Newsom should be recalled, I don't know if Newsom would be one of the candidates on that. I can't find the answer for that. So, for example, if you had 51% of the people who said Newsom should be recalled, but Newsom got 49% that want to keep him there, then maybe on question number two, maybe he gets 49% and he still stays in. I don't know if that's the case, or is he ruled out because they just said they wanted him recalled, the majority of people. I don't know. Because what happens is, with these large number of people that are on the ballot, whoever gets the most votes wins, even if the winner doesn't have a majority. Even if he doesn't have more than, or she doesn't have more than 50% of the votes, they're still going to go with it. So you could have, in a scenario, let's say, that, 51% of the people say Newsom should go, 49% of the people want to keep him, but, I don't know if this is the case, maybe Newsom is not allowed in the pool where 49% of the people could vote for him. So let's say that he gets pulled out, and now you got a bunch of different people running for this, and maybe you got somebody like Larry Elder who gets 30% of the vote and becomes governor. And that's possible. That's kind of a strange thing. It'd be interesting. I think he would shake things up. I know of Larry Elder, but I've never heard a single program of his or seen a single interview where he was interviewed or he was doing the interview or where he was interviewed. So I don't really know anything about him. I just know that he is characterized as somebody who is conservative / libertarian, that he grew up in L.A. and yeah, so he's from the area, and he's not elitist. I'm concerned about the fact that he supported Trump, but other than that, I don't really know anything about him. But it sure would shake things up. And that was the point I was going to make about Trump. The one thing I was hoping was that he might, as divisive as he was throughout all the campaign, I was hoping that he was really going to start a civil war in Washington with these people. I was hoping that he would kind of go to war. The best case scenario would be that he would go to war with the establishment, that he'd declassify some of the secrets that they've held, which would expose them. And that could have brought the legitimacy of the federal government down, it could have exposed the fraud, and it could have pushed for reformation if people knew and it was shown what they have done, instead of dismissing all that as just a conspiracy theorist, So that would have been a very positive thing. But instead, what Trump did was he united Washington. He united both the left and the right, the Republicans and Democrats, against him and against us. And then what he did was he increased the division in America with people at the local level. So he unified Washington against us, and he divided us against each other. Worst possible scenario. And then locked us down, said he was the nationalist, he was against globalism and everything, yet he's the person who created and funded and subsidized the global vaccines. Now Joe Biden is planning to mandate foreign visitors to the U.S. be vaccinated. The White House has held discussions with airlines and others about how it would implement a policy of requiring vaccines for foreign visitors. Why are they doing this? First of all, look at the hypocrisy, as Breitbart points out, because they're still very much about the border, even though it's you're beating a dead horse. We knew for the longest time that nobody in the Republican Party wanted to do anything about this. Paul Rhino and Mitch McConnell didn't want to do anything about it. We kept electing Republicans to do something about the open border, but they never did anything about it. Trump didn't do anything about it. So, as they point out on Breitbart, on Wednesday, city officials from McAllen, Texas, revealed that the Biden administration had released more than 7,000 who tested positive for the virus into their community since February. This week alone, more than 1,500 coronavirus-positive border crossers were released into the area. Think about that, and then think about the fact that for people who are flying into this country, oh, it's not enough. You can't just have a test. You must be vaccinated. Having a test, wearing a mask, and all the rest of this stuff, that's not sufficient. You must be vaccinated now if you're going to be on a plane. This has nothing to do with any concern about a pandemic. This is about creating a no-fly list, a no-fly conditions for anybody who's unvaccinated. That's why they're doing this. Again, there's nothing about a test. You can wear a mask, you can do the social distancing stuff, you can take all the tests, everything. That's still not good enough. You will have to be vaxxed. And so they are now talking about how they're going to implement this. They're going to test it with foreigners. But this is for domestic tyranny. This is to shut down transportation. So the TSA was always the Transportation Security Agency. It wasn't about airplanes. They've, in the past, they've put out their Viper teams, and they've done a couple of run-ins on buses and trains and things like that. They were criticized for it. They pull back. But let me tell you, it is when you look at anything other than a car, and this is why they want to get rid of cars. Look at any other form of transportation, whether it's public transportation within a city or if it's planes or trains. The TSA and the Biden administration are going to shut down anybody that's not, first of all, wearing a mask, but then it's going to be about vaccination. And this is not about protecting the country from people coming in who are sick because they're releasing 7,000 into just one city who tested positive. Tested positive. I mean, you couldn't fly previous to this. You couldn't fly on a plane if you tested positive. Now they're bringing people in, testing them positive. All right, you can go now. Just 1,500 this week. It's accelerating. So all of this, it's not simply hypocrisy. This is about making sure that those of us who are not vaccinated, who are going to be the vermin of this new society, this new dystopian society, they will make sure that we cannot travel. The only thing left for them to do is to make sure that we can't travel in automobiles. And they're working on that very, very hard, to shut down all automobiles and to make sure that you can't afford anything, that you're going to rent these vehicles by the ride, unless you are somebody who's very wealthy and can, and the rules don't apply to you. The Biden administration is discussing a plan to require full vaccination for foreign visitors, except for the border crossers. And you've got a former Obama official demanding that we have a no-fly list for unvaccinated adults. See, it's not a conspiracy theory. I'm not projecting any of this stuff. Like I said before, I'm not a fortune teller. I'm not a crystal ball reader. I'm just telling you what these people are saying they're going to do and have been saying they're going to do. Because that's what this policy is. They really don't care about foreigners coming across the border. They don't care about testing people. They want to make sure that you are going to have to be vaccinated in order to live your life. That's the stage that we're in right now. As de Blasio said, the voluntary phase is over. The phase of bribery is over. The phase of telling everybody what a great, wonderful vaccine this is. We've never had anything like this before in the history of the world, as Trump continues to say. That phase is over. And I'll tell you, because I told you before the election, how this is going to roll out. And I said, all the people said, we better hope that Trump gets in because Biden is going to make it mandatory. I said, no, Biden will do it the same way that Trump would do it. And I'm absolutely certain that Trump would have run this whole thing exactly the same way that Biden has. Absolutely. Because it was always going to be through the corporations. And it was always going to be the stage where you should get this. This is great. I love this. This is wonderful. And he was doing all that stuff beforehand. And then saying we're going to mandate it through the federal employees and so forth. I said what's going to happen is they're going to put it out there for the low-hanging fruits. And they're going to snap it up because they're scared to death. I got a friend that I knew from high school, went through the military. I'm not on Facebook, but Karen keeps up with people occasionally on Facebook. She just blocked him because he's a retired colonel. All he does is just push the vaccine now, people. I don't even want to see this stuff anymore. We're at that phase. And so you have the low-hanging fruit who take it, the people who believe in government as their savior. And then you have the people who can be bribed. You have the people who can be coerced. And as they're building up their stockpile and their manufacturing capabilities, then I said they would turn to the kids and they would start pushing it towards the kids and testing it to the kids for the summer because by fall, they wanted to be able to have it approved for kids and required for school. That's why I said it was going to be in the fall. And guess what? Now we're seeing that the FDA is going to violate its own rules for approving a drug. It's supposed to go through a 2 to 3 year period minimum of testing to be approved. They're going to set that aside. They could put in an emergency use authorization. That's an emergency use authorization. But to say that it's fully approved, that violates the FDA's own rules. And they're going to do this. Everybody's talking about it being the middle of September. And you notice that whether it's Macron or whether it's de Blasio in New York or whether it's fill in the blank at these schools, they're all saying by the middle of September, you will. And you're seeing it from a lot of private employers. Do you think that they know something that they're not sharing with you? Is this a conspiracy? Are they passing this information to each other saying, I know we're going to have this done by the middle of September. And actually, I think we've had even Fauci publicly say that at least once. That's going to happen. And as soon as they do that, they're going to say, well, that's it. We're done. We can mandate this. Go for it. So this is what she writes, this former Obama official, Kayem, K-A-Y-Y-E-M, Kayem. She says, and this is an op-ed piece that she wrote on The Atlantic, another NATO propaganda rag, which, by the way, is going bankrupt. So they need to get some more funding from the CIA and the NSA. She says, at this stage of the pandemic, tougher universal restrictions are not the solution to continuing viral spread. While flying, vaccinated people should no longer carry the burden for the unvaccinated people. See, we're the problem. They're trying to save society, and we're trying to destroy society. We're the vermin. We're the typhoid Marys. And, of course, it's not going to be more testing. It's not going to be more masks. It's not going to be more lockdowns. They're going to come after the people who don't take their vaccine. She said, if you submit to heightened security in advance, the TSA pre-check lets you go through security without taking off your shoes. Isn't that nice? Do you notice how this is now normalized? Did you ever think, because I never did you ever think, isn't this nice and normal that I have to take off my shoes to get on a plane? That I have to have a body scan or a pat-down. Did you ever for a minute think that this was normal? I'm actually kind of happy about this because I hated flying. It ruined my vacations. It was an extra burden on a work trip because it would make me furious. And I would force them to do a pat-down on me because I knew they didn't want to do it either. And because I wanted to be a monkey wrench in the machinery as much as I could. So even though I was forced to go, now I've got an excuse. I don't have to fly anywhere. A no-fly list will keep certain people off the plane entirely, she says. Because, you know, the TSA is really not the Transportation Security Agency. It's the Tyranny Security Agency. Going back again, 9/11, dark winter, it was all, and it is, again, still rolling out through the airplanes, right? The tyranny that they're normalizing people live under. She said, flying is not a right. No, it's not. But traveling is. Traveling is a right. And would you deny somebody being allowed to fly because of their skin color or because of their sex or because of their religion or any of these other things that we would discriminate against people for? So why would you support, as a good, loyal Democrat who opposes all of those issues, why would you say that I can't fly if I don't inject a substance into my body that you demand? That's not right. No, this is to shut down all travel. The federal government, she says, is the sole entity that can regulate the terms and conditions of airline safety. And although air filtration, and this is why we're seeing all the tyranny rolling out through the airplanes, right? Because it's completely controlled by this tyrannical empire that has to be destroyed in Washington. And they're going to destroy themselves. This is an empire. These are tyrants without any clothes. Naked tyranny coming from the federal government. When it comes to the rest of this stuff, they have to push it through the states, sprinkling money through them, push it through the corporations, giving them money and market share. But when it comes to the airlines, that's when you can see the real, true heart of this Rome on the Potomac. Although air filtration systems and mask requirements, she says, make transmission of the coronavirus unlikely during any given passenger flight, then, she says, infected people, however, can spread it when they leave the airport and take off their mask. You're telling me that after you put people in a little tight plane for hours, breathing the same air, yeah, you got a great filtration. Do you really? You got a great filtration system? Can it filter that virus out that the masks don't filter? Right? Any airborne virus? How many microns is this air filter that you've got? I'd like to know. Seriously. You should tell us. You know, if we got some kind of a filter that can filter out a virus, well, that's a serious filter. I've been on airplanes, and I can tell you that they don't have those kind of filters. I remember when there used to be smoking on the planes, and there was no such thing as a non-smoking section. I didn't like that, but I also didn't like the idea that they wouldn't allow different airlines to say, we're going to have a smoking flight or a non-smoking flight or whatever. Of course, they didn't want that. The airlines wanted the governments to say you couldn't have that distinction, so they wouldn't have to have the expense and the business headache of doing both of those. They invited that kind of prohibition of smoking. But yeah, you go on an airplane, and it's like it did not filter out the smoke at all. But she's saying, yeah, we could wear masks, and we got air filters, and so, you know, those wonderful masks that are going to stop the virus and the air filters are going to stop the virus, you don't have any chance of getting it in an enclosed area for hours with people breathing the same air. But once you get out and you're in a big indoor airport and you take off that mask maybe, or you get outside of the airport, out in the open and you take off that mask, now you're going to get people sick. This is the kind of absurdity. These people are a joke who keep pushing this stuff. She championed the unvaccinated. She said, shaming the unvaccinated. She said, we should face scorn among their peer group. Oh, really? Well, I think face scorn is when you wear your Fauci. She said, they may even be happy to have an excuse to protect themselves. She celebrated Broadway, Disney, Walmart for forcing the unvaccinated to give up, quote, certain societal benefits to practice their individuality and their freedom of choice. Let me tell you something. I could go the rest of my life without going to Broadway, Disney, or Walmart. I'd be perfectly happy. Those are not essential to my life. My being able to walk without being paralyzed, my being able to breathe, being able to be alive, I value those far more than being able to go to Broadway, Disney, or Walmart. You're going to have to come up with a better stick than that. No one likes wearing masks. She said, nope, people need to get vaccinated. That's the only way we're going to cut this off. Nobody likes wearing a mask. Well, you know, the problem is that they've got the vaccinated people wearing masks. See, that's the problem. These people can't keep their lives straight. None of this makes any sense. Here's a good example, and this is something that I had not mentioned, but this is from a supporter on Subscribestar, a message that they put in. This is from Jeffrey. He says, I've got a question. He says, how come Fauci can now all of a sudden say that vaxxed and unvaxxed people have the same viral load of COVID in their nose? Because during the whole pandemic, the plandemic, we have been using PCR and antigen tests to diagnose, and those cannot test a viral load. That's excellent. I should have thought about that a long time ago. You should think about this. You should use this argument with people. How can they say that they've got the same viral load? Because the whole point of a PCR test, and the whole reason that Kerry Mullis, who invented the PCR test, criticized Fauci, and we've had all these discussions about the cycle threshold, which means the number of times that you're going to double it, right? So you got a cycle threshold of 40. That means that you double it again, double it again, double it again. You do that 40 times. You get a trillion times magnification. 2 to the 40th power. And they're saying if you do that more than, you know, 26 or 30 times, it's absolute garbage. Even Fauci said that. But when they do these tests, they don't tell you what the cycle threshold magnification is. But the whole point is that they're magnifying it. If you're going to magnify something by a trillion times, or if you're going to magnify it by 200,000 times, you don't know what the viral load is. You're just looking for being there in sub-micro, you know, scopic amounts. That's the whole point of magnifying it through the PCR test. It doesn't test the viral load. It's magnifying anything that's there. And that's been the whole crux of the pushback against this. That's why I should have thought of this. So good job, Jeffrey. You get a gold star for today. But again, it's critical thinking to catch them on their lies. They have never looked at the viral load with these PCR tests. And that's one of the reasons why the PCR tests are invalid, is because they don't look at viral load. That's how you get people who are asymptomatic testing positive, because it's magnifying it to an absurd amount, regardless of the viral load. That's why you're not sick. That's why you cannot pass it on. They're testing and magnifying it beyond that level. And then, of course, now the CDC is scrapping that PCR test at the end of the year, as he points out. So he goes, what new tests, if any, are they going to use? Are they just going to make this stuff up? Well, they're just going to make it up. No, they will have. They do have a saliva test. They're saying, I don't know if that's the one that Soros and Gates bought, but I bet you anything that the test that they're going to transition to by the end of the year to replace the PCR test is the one that Gates and Soros just invested in. I can guarantee that. You know, that's an investment tip, by the way, if it's publicly traded. If you want to trade on the dark side, you want to do we could call it the Darth Vader Fund, right? We could put up all the different things that the Empire is investing in, you know. I'm going to invest in that company that makes Death Stars. that's going to be my path to getting rich. Anyway, he says, do you have a link for the Spanish laughing guy meme? I'm finding it hard to find, searching online, and would like to share it with others. It's too funny. I'll go back. I downloaded that to put it on the show. If I can find that, I'll put that up on my Twitter and Gab feed later today so you can have it, because I did think that was funny. And I've seen people do that with various other things. Again, it's like the one Hitler movie that they did where the guy's in the bunker and he's, you know, hammering his, and they put different subtitles down for other stuff. But it's still funny, and it cracks me up every time I hear that guy laughing. It was perfect the way they subtitled it. So now, as we see this mania to have vaccine passports, we have Republican Senator Kevin Cramer of North Dakota has now introduced a bill to call out their hypocrisy. If you're going to have a state that mandates vaccine passports, then you also have to mandate voter ID. Oh, well, that's interesting. And listen to how this flows. And let me just underscore again. You know, I talk about how this all began with Trump. It began with the money, right? That's how they control everything. That's how they control the schools, how they control and push the LGBT agenda in the schools and so forth. Here's what he says in his bill. Quote, it states, if states take federal money for elections, then they and if they put this in their vaccine status, then we're going to require them to mandate voter ID. Now, of course, it's not going to pass. The Democrats will not pass this. But again, how does the federal government get people to do things? By federal money. I'm giving you federal money for education. I'm giving you federal money for sports programs. That means that I'm going to tell, when I tell you that you got to put boys in the locker room in the shower, that's what you're going to do, or I'm going to take away the federal money. And all the Republicans know that. That's how it works. The grassroots doesn't realize that. That's why they don't understand that it's Trump's lockdown, because Trump did the same thing with a lockdown that Cramer is doing with the hypocrisy about the voter ID versus a vaccine passport. If you want our money, you do this. And that's what Trump did. This is from an employee who works for Disney. He asked that I not mention his name. I won't even mention where he works. And he does not work in the places where you'd expect usually that you would have Disney. But he says that now, of course, Disney was saying this at a lot of different places, but it extends to everything. They're now requiring proof of vaccination. He says, how can an employer not be allowed to discriminate on everything else? Which is exactly what I said about the about flying. Flying is not a right. Okay, well, then are you going to deny flying to people based on their sex, their age, their religious status, their skin color? We're not going to allow you to discriminate on that. Why should we allow you to discriminate on their medical condition? Right, we had the Americans with Disabilities Act that was trumpeted by George H.W. Bush and Democrats since then, saying we're not going to allow, not only are we not going to discriminate, but in public areas, we're going to force people to build handicap available accessories, right? You're going to have a ramp, or you're going to have special things that you can grab onto for toilets and so forth. That's how we see all these things. That's been there since George H.W. Bush, because they wanted to make sure that in a public area, nobody was going to be excluded because of their medical condition. And now that's exactly the way that they're trying to reorganize society, by excluding on people because of their medical decisions and their medical condition. Because for a lot of people, it's not a medical decision. It's not even an ethical decision. For a lot of people, they've already had issues with Guillain-Barré syndrome or other things. Just as we have people who could not wear the mask because they had asthma or heart issues. And we had a guy who was, I didn't show that clip. I had it to show, but I don't have it in the thing here. A guy in Australia who, an elderly man, who was in a park situation, and you have a couple of uniformed thugs, because that's what they are. They're thugs in costumes, come up to him and start harassing him. And the person who's taking it says he's got a permit for this. You know, he's got health issues. He can't wear a mask. And so they kept harassing him. They put him in handcuffs. And as they're walking him out, he collapsed. He had a heart attack. And she's screaming, get his medicine, get his medicine. She's, you know, there's two of them, only one of her. They've got weapons that they will use on people. So she couldn't do anything to get his medicine. He's got a bag there, and they've taken their sweet time in order to get the stuff out and get it to him as he's having a heart attack in handcuffs because he wasn't wearing a mask, because he couldn't wear a mask. But we don't care about that anymore. So he says, how can employers be allowed to discriminate but then mandate medical procedures for me? And they said in a company email, all through Disney, we believe it is important to put the safety of our employees and cast members at the forefront, yet they're going to put my life at risk on a drug that has killed at least 12,000 in 6 months. I don't know what to do. I've reached out to Barnes Law and others. Perhaps there's some lawyers that have had success in fighting these mandates. All I need is time, but Disney's only going to give us 60 days to provide proof of the shot to remain employed. Do you have any ideas? I really don't. I don't know. You know, you might want to, there might be some lawyers that are starting to do this, maybe as class action suits, or maybe they're doing it as an individual test cases. Maybe you'll be able to find something with Children's Health Defense Fund if you write them, or America's Frontline Doctors, or some other organizations like that. They might be in touch with like-minded lawyers. There's a lot of lawyers who are out there trying to keep get Trump back in the White House, but nobody's trying to keep us from being purged out of the public square, right? The UK government is going to prepare to vaccinate 16 and 17-year-olds and do it without parental consent. Understand, this is coming to America as well. The UK is not the only country in Europe either to begin vaccinating children, as Breitbart puts it, against the China virus. They always do that. Why doesn't Breitbart say the United Kingdom is not going to be the only country in Europe to begin vaccinating children with the Trump shot? That's what it should say. Stop the China virus. See, this is why, and again, I have talked going back to 2014, I've opposed gain-of-function research. I've called out Fauci on this stuff for years. But last year, I would not sign on to this, and I don't want to make the Wuhan thing the center point of this, because that's now being done for two reasons. It's being done for partisan advantage, and it's being done to distract people and to put fear into them so they'll take the vaccine. That's why I see people like Rand Paul doing it. The classroom jabs are coming. If we look at, this is a newspaper clipping that was sent to me from a listener in Australia. Exclusive. Victorian children aged 12 and above to get vaccinated at school from December and the rollout expansion. So they're just going to do it at the school. And remember, this is Australia where only 13%, this is a Herald Sun headline, only 13% of the people have gotten the jab. They've only had a handful of people who've died. They've had maybe one or two people they claim have died from the Delta variant, as they've locked down into heavy martial law, helicopters, sending in the military and everything else. And now they're going to start jabbing kids in the classroom starting in December. It's amazing. This article headline, I like the headline, Reason Magazine, resist de Blasio's vaccine passport. As they say, de Blasio's announcement that he intends by mayoral dictate to make it illegal for someone without a city-approved proof of vaccination to work at or to be customers of the city's gyms, entertainment venues, indoor restaurants is a grossly unconstitutional tyranny, annihilating human liberty of movement, commerce, and association with a dangerously tenuous justification. As I looked at this, I couldn't see that he made any statement at all about making an exception for people who had tested negative. The only thing that I can see is that because they're going to accept the Excelsior Pass, and for the time being, the Excelsior Pass, the one that that other wonderful political leader from New York, Cuomo, put in, the Excelsior Pass, you can get tested on a regular basis. And then, you know, for a day or two, you can then have a little bit of liberty based on the test. It was just a couple of weeks ago, about the middle of July, that de Blasio said he was going to force all city employees to test on a weekly basis. And then 2 weeks later, all right, now everybody who's not even a city employee, you're going to have a vaccine passport to get in. He keeps talking about it being a vaccine passport. And even if there's going to be a temporary period of time through this Excelsior Pass where you can travel if you test negative, that is just a temporary thing. He's going for only vaccinated people get to live their life. You see this from everybody. You see this from the Obama official that I just talked about. You see it from all of the media. You see it from media people like Geraldo Rivera on Fox News as well. You see it from the Fox News people. The Fox News people are pushing the vaccine very, very hard. And so it's absolutely going to happen that way. De Blasio did not even give, says Reason, the public the respect of explaining and defending the data and the risk calculations behind his vague hand-waving about, quote, lives saved and, of course, science. He made no attempt to explain what we know or don't know about the risks an unvaccinated person presents of causing serious harm to a vaccinated person, or the risk that anyone will encounter someone transmitting COVID. There is no detail of this. There is no data. Now we have these different reversals being done all the time by the CDC, and they said, well, we're not releasing the data, and even the experts say, what? You're not going to show us any data? No. And this is, again, another aspect of how this is exactly like the freak-out climate change stuff, which was going to be global cooling, then it was going to be global warming, then they changed it to climate change, and they just pulled that out and stuck in as the sky is falling justification, the virus. always the same remedy, regardless of what the coming apocalypse was going to be. And, of course, as we've seen this last year, as they shut everything down, and you didn't have it didn't make any difference, right, in terms of man-made climate change. We didn't see any difference at all with that. It's all a lie, and they've never shown the data. And if people had been paying attention to this climate thing, yeah, it was absurd. You know, this Chicken Little, the sky is falling stuff that was being pushed by Greta and AOC. It was easy to laugh at them as idiots, because there are idiots. But nobody seriously looked at this and said, show me the data. And when we did, they shut us down. They said, we're not going to show you the data. That's all you needed to know. But people went through this, and they were the ones yelling, science, science, science about climate change. Now they're doing the same thing here. It's just a bluff. Reason says, it's never been possible to run a risk-free society, and our current political class's attempts to pretend to do so, while failing, get ever more darker and more insane by the week. That's right. Whatever tenuous excuses any public official might have for treating the unvaccinated as a unique menace who must be driven from society, these tenuous excuses get more absurd by the day. Western culture has always had a justifiably bad attitude about the mark without which one can neither buy or sell. This is reason, so they don't want to say mark of the beast, right? Don't you find that interesting? You know, there was nothing in the Bible about altering your genome or anything like that associated with the mark of the beast, or about killing people or anything necessarily about that. But it was about, you will not buy or sell. And this will be done on a global basis to set up a global government. And that there will be global communication and so forth and so on. Isn't that interesting? Doesn't that make you want to dig a little bit deeper into that ancient book? Anyway, people with the power to stop you from going places and demanding your papers is also something that we should reject, that Western society has always rejected. And, you know, reason won't say it, but, you know, when they say Western society has had a bad attitude about a mark without which anyone can buy or sell, that's because Western society was based on Christian values. But, you know, let's not go there for the reason people. They want to worship Ayn Rand. De Blasio cannot, alas, be recalled. So New Yorker's best option is a combination of lawsuits against this power grab, mass civil disobedience, and mass protests. And yet you haven't seen any of that, have you? Not like you've seen in France. You have had a few individuals who have stood up and pushed back. Here's one who is a guy who still is on YouTube for the time being. And he runs a New York City computer shop. This guy's name is Louis Rossman. And as RT points out, he's had a lot of commentaries on the right to repair. Because evidently this is a thing, as it has been now for tractors and for automobiles and things like that. You know, they, under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, you had companies like John Deere, like GM, saying, as cars become more and more electronically controlled, then you don't even have individual components that can be repaired. It's not like you had the old analog carburetor or something that you can clean up or remachine or whatever. They become essentially black boxes, and the black boxes become more and more complex and more expensive. And, you know, so if you do a repair, in many cases what you're doing is you're swapping out a subsystem, a black box. But it's gotten to the point where in this right to repair issue, and I haven't seen his stuff, I don't know if this is what he's talking about, but this is something going back several years with John Deere and with GM. So I don't know where it is right now, but at that time, even if, you could, and it surfaced with John Deere because you have farmers who like to repair their own equipment and always have when it was simple stuff. But if they go out and get a very, very expensive tractor from John Deere, and these guys had the motivation to try to save money and the tinkering orientation that they would diagnose which subsystem it was, even if they went out and bought that subsystem and replaced it themselves, they would, John Deere had made sure that it would brick it, right? You would still not be able to use it, even with a good new subsystem, because you would have to go to the dealer and pay the dealer. So basically, you didn't really own that tractor or the GM vehicle or whatever, because you don't have the right to repair it. You'll have to take it to the dealer and pay them whatever they say to repair it. So he's spoken out about that, a wide range of issues, they said. He's got a large following. He put out a video, and he said, basically, I'm pro-vax, but I'm anti-authoritarian. Maybe that'll save him on YouTube to say I'm pro-vax. But here's what he had to say. He said, it's clear that New York City's leaders don't understand the concept of consent. Pointing to the economic devastation caused by more than a year of lockdowns and other restrictions, Rossman said that most businesses in the city don't have the, quote, luxury of selecting customers based on their own personal health decisions. I would just say, by the way, they do understand consent, and they reject it. They understand the Constitution. They understand the Bill of Rights, and they reject it. You know, Obama taught constitutional law, and he said before he became president, he said, you know, the Constitution has a concept of negative rights. And by that, what he meant was the Bill of Rights are prohibitions on government from doing certain things. So that's negative. No, it's actually a good thing. he said, but, you know, the Bill of Rights is really negative. I don't really support that, he said. He doesn't support any negative restrictions on tyrannical actions by government. No, he said, we view rights as positive. In other words, you have a right to health care, you have a right to housing, a right to education, a right to all these things being provided for you by government or by somebody else's labor. And so that's, you know, he understood the Bill of Rights perfectly. And he exactly articulated what the dispute is. And they chose the dark side. These people understand consent, and they're trying to shut it down. I'm not becoming the effing vaccination police, he said, on top of all the other BS, just to do business in this city. I don't care if you come in here and try to fine me for not following an authoritarian rule. I really do hope that more people start pushing back against this BS, against this garbage dystopia that we're starting to live in. He said de Blasio needs to be sent a strong message in order to make it clear that a red line has been crossed. Yes, you know what that red line is? It's the line of Marxism. We've crossed over into a communist dictatorship. That's what I said in the titles. I said, you know, de Blasio is a Marxist mayor. He always has been. Honeymoon in Cuba, under Castro. You cannot call me an anti-vaxxer, he said. What you can call me is anti-authoritarian. Well, he just needs to own it. I understand he wants to stay on social media. I understand he wants to stay on YouTube. So you have to pretend that you're not anti-vax. Let me tell you something. This whole thing, the vaccines are a tool for authoritarianism. They're a tool not just for authoritarianism, but for totalitarianism. The totalitarianism is being imposed by YouTube. And when you say, I'm going to say that I'm pro-vaccine so they don't shut me down, now you are engaged. Now you have prostrated yourself to totalitarianism, because totalitarianism is to get you to say that 2 plus 2 equals 5. Totalitarianism is to get you to accept this mentally and spiritually. Authoritarianism is going to beat you with a stick. Totalitarianism seeks to control your mind and to get you to buy into this double-think, double-speak voluntarily. So, I have a letter from Hungary. You know, we have... And I don't know if he's already doing this or if he's going to do it next week or whatever. I don't have time to watch Tucker Carlson. But he is running his show either this week or next week or something from Hungary. I saw that when I looked at the Drudge Report. There was a picture on the Drudge Report yesterday, and it was striking. I mean, it looked like something out of the Lord of the Rings. It was a tunnel, and it had these statues on either side. Like something out of Lord of the Rings, these medieval kings or something carved into niches on the side. And as you look through this tunnel, there was the way the light was hitting it and everything, the light hit on a castle that was off in the distance. Beautiful blue sky in the background. I thought, wow, I would like to go to Hungary, but I'm not going to be traveling anywhere ever again, certainly not internationally, and certainly not to Hungary based on this letter from Subscribestar supporter who said, I love your show. Listen to your show here in Hungary. I lived in Boston for 12 years until last year. Unfortunately, Viktor Orban is an absolute disgrace on the virus and vaccine front. He just made the vaccine mandatory for healthcare workers in Hungary, and more mandates are planned. He is absolutely not the hero the American right often thinks he is, even though he did some good things. And, you know, I think perhaps the reason that Tucker Carlson is going there and the good things that I've said about Orban are based on their standing inflexibly in support of defending children from this LGBT transgender gaslighting that they're doing to kids. And then becoming the point of attack against that, the people, the LGBT people in the EU, demonstrators in Berlin, demanding that you bring out your kids and expose them to what we want to show them. We're going to take your kids from you. We want to brainwash them. We want to gender gaslight them. And so when somebody stands against that, that is a good thing. And we need to celebrate that. And we need to hold that up as an example to the feckless, spineless politicians that we have in this country. That's why I said it made me disgusted to see Sean Hannity putting Bruce Jenner on his show. But, you know, that is something to celebrate. But if you're going to push a vaccine, that's it. He's on, you know, do not support that at all. Absolutely do not support that. And it tells you something very, very troubling about ultimately where he is and on which side he is and his lack of discernment, his lack of standing for the people if he's going to push vaccines. So the letter goes on to say, one topic that is unfortunately never talked about is the forced vaccination on immigrants, people who seek green cards in the U.S., and I had personal experience with it, specifically the Tdap or the TD vaccine is mandatory for an adult green card applicant if he or she can't show a vaccination record from the vaccine in the last year. She said it doesn't make any sense. First of all, this vaccine, so she's looking at this as, if I understand this correctly, as somebody who wanted to get a green card here in America. And says, well, I've got to have the Tdap vaccine. She says this is not mandated for American citizens. It's only recommended that you take it every 10 years. Secondly, the selected doctors who deal with immigrants are called civil surgeons, and they don't accept immunity from these diseases. I know because I tried, and they refused it. There's a study from 2016 showing that immunity for tetanus and diphtheria lasts for at least 30 years after vaccination. I received these vaccines as a child. I got the last booster when I was 32. I knew about this study, so I had my blood checked for tetanus and for diphtheria antibodies with a private lab to see if I still had immunity. And indeed, I was still immune to both of these 28 years after the last booster. And then third, why would you require a vaccine mandate for something that is not contagious, right? You're not going to spread this. It's not an infectious disease like that, that you're going to spread it to other people. Why would you require that? It's a non-communicable disease. It is not a public health concern. Even if an immigrant catches it, they will not spread it. So she said, I refused to get the vaccine. I gave up the green card process. Also, if the green card petitioner applies and visits the immigration doctor, civil surgeon, in flu season, they also have to get the flu vaccine. So when you look at our vaccine policy, again, you got to get vaccinated, no exceptions, for something like typhus, which is not going to be spread to people, right? Tetanus. I spoke. Typhoid, you could spread to people. Typhoid Mary did that, right? For tetanus. You're going to have to get vaccinated for tetanus in order to get a green card in America. You're going to have to be vaccinated for COVID in order to fly here from a foreign country. But, hey, let's bring in 8,500 people, you know, 1,500 of them in the last week, and one city who test positive and will release them. See, none of this makes any sense because this is not about health. This is not about medicine. Whenever you start talking about public anything and throwing away the individual, when the individual is trampled on by the public, you're talking about tyranny. You're talking about a dictatorship. You're not talking about anything that is pragmatic. A new state of segregation. Vaccine cards are just the beginning, writes John Whitehead from the Rutherford Institute. John is always good on issues of liberty. He said, imagine a national classification system that not only categorizes you according to your health status, but also allows the government to sort you in 100 other ways, by gender, by orientation, by wealth, by medical condition, by religious beliefs, political viewpoint, legal status, etc. This is what is happening as we begin with the vaccine passports. And it will end with a national system of segregation. It has already begun. With every passing day, more and more private businesses and government agencies on both state and federal level are requiring proof of COVID vaccine, Trump shots, in order for individuals to work, travel, shop, attend school, generally participate in the life of the country. And again, I pointed this out last fall. I said it was going to go this way. It would be rolled out as they were getting people accustomed to it, as they rolled out their propaganda campaign, as they built up inventory. Then you would have another outbreak. They would blame it on the unvaccinated while they're going to extend it to kids and then demand it by the fall for the kids, mid-September. When we look at this, you know, just remember where all this began.
They have to get the shot. The vaccinations are so important. This is really going around now. They have to get their shot.
Yeah, that was for measles, remember, 2019? And so now we have this meme that is going around. I'm almost wondering, I saw it so much, there was a hashtag, vaccine passports is trending. I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. I looked at it on Twitter, and I saw post after post after post of this picture. Now, I don't know if this is a bot campaign to put this picture up with the hashtag vaccine passport or whatever. But basically it shows a yellow chart there. Says you literally had a vaccine passport all through school. Relax. It says immunity record. And so I replied to that. I said, well, no. When I was in school, America was a free country. Mandatory shots are something recent. It was Trump in 2019 that said, they got to get the shots. That was when they were fighting about that over measles in California and New York, where they always roll out this tyranny. That's why you should be very concerned about this vaccine passport stuff that's rolling out. And, you know, both the Excelsior Pass as well as these mandates by de Blasio. You know, Cuomo and de Blasio, the two of them. They hate each other. That's interesting, you know. By the way, let me just say this. I have all these people say, well, you know, Trump's not on their side. They absolutely hate him. Do you think there's a dime's worth of difference between de Blasio and Cuomo, and yet they hate each other? Boy, de Blasio, you see what he's doing about Cuomo? He said, yeah, throw him in jail. He wants them out of. They hate each other on a personal level. Same political party, same agenda, same tactics and programs and demands on everybody, but they hate each other. And I'm telling you, the same thing is true with Trump. He's on their team. You just think that he's on the other team because he hates them and they hate him. It's the same thing with de Blasio and Cuomo. Anyway, I said, yeah, no, when I grew up, America was a free country, and we didn't have to get the shots. And it was a free country when Trump grew up, and he didn't have to get the shots either. He's a lot older than I am. And we had natural immunity, our generation did, to measles. No matter, says Whitehead, he says, no matter what one's views may be regarding the government's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic, this is an unnerving proposition for a company a country that claims to prize the rights of the individual and whose Bill of Rights were written in such a way as to favor the rights of the minority. By allowing government agents to establish a litmus test for individuals to be able to engage in commerce, movement, and any other right that corresponds to life in a supposedly free society, it lays the groundwork for a show-me-your-papers society in which you're required to identify yourself at any time to any government worker who demands it for any reason. We have reason saying this is a mark of the, they call it mark of the beast, they're not Christian. This is a mark that you have to have in order to buy or sell. Well, we always thought that was, we always held that idea in scorn. And then you have The Hill saying, I think we're moving towards a Chinese social credit system. Yeah. Whitehead said such tactics can quickly escalate into a power grab that empowers government agents to force anyone and everyone to prove that they are in compliance with every statute, every regulation on the books. And he says, we live in an era of over-criminalization, and he refers to Harvey Silvergate's book, three felonies a day, saying most Americans, and this was written several years ago, most Americans unwittingly commit three felonies a day. You don't think that's true? I remember a couple who were celebrating their engagement or something, and they had like three or four balloons that were heart-shaped, and they were standing on the beach, and they let them go, and they put it out on social media, and then they were charged with a felony for releasing balloons in a protected area or something. It was like, you know, sea turtles or whatever, you know, snail darters or whatever was around there, right? You don't even know that you're going to create a felony. I mean, there weren't signs around there saying that you couldn't do that, that it was protected. So yeah, felonies all the time. The right to move about freely has been undermined, has been overtaken and rewritten into a privilege granted by the government to the citizens who are prepared to toe the line and to inject the substance. That's not what he said. That's what I say. Now, vaccine passports, vaccine admission requirements, travel restrictions may seem like small and necessary steps in winning the war against COVID virus, but it's just so much propaganda. They're only necessary to the police state and its efforts to further brainwash the populace into believing that the government legitimately has the power to enforce such blatant acts of authoritarianism. It makes no difference if such police state tactics are carried out in the name of national security or protecting America's border or making America healthy again. The bottom line is you can't live in a constitutional republic if you allow government to act like a police state. You can't claim to value freedom if you allow the government to operate like a dictatorship. You can't expect to have your rights respected if you allow the government to treat whoever it pleases with disrespect and with another disregard of the law. He says, no one gets spared the anguish, fear, and heartache of living in a police state. He said, the message is being broadcast 24/7. With every new piece of government propaganda, every new law that criminalizes otherwise lawful activity, every new policeman on the beat, every new surveillance camera casting a watchful eye, every sensationalist news story that titillates and distracts, every new prison or detention center built to house troublemakers and other undesirables, every new court ruling that gives government agents a green light to strip and steal and rape and ravage the citizenry, every school that opts to indoctrinate rather than educate, every new justification for why Americans should comply with the government's attempts to trample the Constitution underfoot. Yes, COVID-19 has taken a significant toll on the nation emotionally, physically, and economically, but there are still greater dangers on the horizon. As long as we the people continue to allow the government to trample our rights in the name of so-called national security or national health, things will get worse and not better. Curiously enough, these COVID-19 mandates, restrictions, and vaccine card requirements dovetail conveniently with a national timeline for states to comply with the Real ID Act. So that's a U.S. thing, the Real ID, which imposes federal standards on identity documents such as states' driver's licenses, a prelude to national identification system. That was a big deal 20 years ago. I mean, you even had people like Alex Jones standing up against that, right? Then he just, because Trump sets up the same tactic, the same program with the vaccine, we knew that the vaccine was going to result in the vaccine passport. There was absolutely no question about that. That was the most predictable part of it. That was what they were saying. You got to lock everybody down. That's what they've been practicing for 20 years. Oh, we got a pandemic. Lock everybody down. No measure can be too draconian. As a matter of fact, in the simulation, they were taught people died because you weren't draconian enough. People died because you didn't approve the vaccine. And the only thing that we are going to allow, they never talked about having any therapeutics or treatments. It was only about the vaccine. And so it was clear that was going to be the process of doing this. And so even though you know about Real ID, you're going to look the other way. Even though you know about Gates ID 2020, you're going to look the other way. Even though you know about Immunization Agenda 2030, everyone, everywhere, every vaccine, by 2030, another Gates agenda, you're going to look the other way. You're going to look the other way even though you know about the UN 2030 agenda, the Smart City agenda. You're going to look the other way. You're going to ignore the Great Reset for the beginning of all of this. Now he's talking about it. You look the other way. You knew exactly what was happening. You had talked about it for decades. He's not the only one. But this is how it goes. Yesterday I had a tweet. They've now taken it down. It happens sometimes. I need to start screenshotting these tweets when I reply to somebody who says something really disgusting. It really made me angry. Oh, well, you got a choice. For those of you who don't understand, let me just explain this to you one more time. You have a choice. You either take the vaccine and live your life, or you do, or you don't take the vaccine and you just stay locked up in your house, that type of attitude. It's your choice. You have the freedom. You still have freedom. We're not taking away your freedom. You have a choice. I retweeted that. They've now deleted it, but I said that's not a choice. It's coercion. Coercion is not choice. I am so sick of people who think I'm that stupid that I can't see through their bragging about all of this stuff. I said, you sound like a mugger, because that's exactly what you're doing. You're stealing liberty and dignity from people. I said, you have a choice. You either support liberty for other people or you're going to lose it yourself. I said, that's always been the choice. But I said, fools think they can purchase safety by using tyranny. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to have Vince Agnelli joining us to talk about the new Virginia plan and what is coming up in Virginia. There's an event that's coming up, maybe as recent as soon as this weekend. We'll find out the details when we come back. Stay with us. Vince Agnelli will be back to talk about local solutions. We'll be right back.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Interested in a curated list of the finest classical music? Find it now at APSradio.com.
Nelly from Virginia. We've talked to Vince many times before, and Vince had a website, newvirginiaplan.com, but now you have relocated to Gab. Tell us a little bit about that and where people can find you, Vince. Thank you for joining us, by the way.
David, thank you again for having me. If it wasn't for you, no one would know about the local solutions and the chances that we can have what we used to have. God bless you, my friend.
Well, no, I mean, other people like you were talking about it too. I mean, it is one thing that I think we have to focus on, and that's a difficult thing because everything, even in the alternative media, and certainly, you know, because it pays the bills to talk about, and it's easier to talk about the national and international issues because that's common to everybody. But and you don't have the resources to cover what is happening in all the individual areas. But that's really where the rubber meets the road, and that is going back. Forever. You know, you had Democrats who would say, think globally, act locally. And so what they're doing is they have a global plan and they're enacting it locally. And we've even seen this as Fauci's been coming out lately saying, we got to roll this stuff out at the local level. That's really what's got to happen. You know, so he's pushing local and state governments. But now he's focusing on the local because he knows that that's really where it has to take place. And that's where our resistance has to take place. And we have to do that work ourselves to find out what's going on and who the players are locally.
I wondered how you were sleeping at night as the the word local started to pop up in the last few weeks, especially from whom we consider the enemy and who we might look to be as our friends. All of a sudden, they're coming around to the David Knight way of thinking. I wondered how you were sleeping with that. Let me talk about the website quickly. You know, I did not own the rights to that website. You know how that works.
Yeah.
It was kind of dumped in my lap, and I used it the best I could as a tool to try to give people information about where they should be looking for solutions, especially local solutions. And rather than spend more money and watching the analytics tell me that only the White House in both Trump and Biden were watching it, I knew the message really wasn't getting to who I really wanted to. So I decided to go ahead and look at Gab.
Yeah.
And I put up spirit_of_Mason on Gab. And if you go to Gab and you look up new government, it should pop up as something you're going to want to click on.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that point, I'm just using a very popular system.
And just to clarify, that's not the Masons. Not a Masonic lodge.
Right. I know
there'll be a lot of people because of history, not knowing the history, they'll think we're the Masons.
I know. Well, you know, hey, if they're willing to go back and read some history on that, you know, they may find out that some of these guys were, you know, certain degree Masons anyway.
That's right.
Maybe that will trip them into some history. Who knows?
You know, you sent some questions, kind of some rhetorical questions for people to think about. One of them I noticed right here, which is what I was talking about earlier. Who is going to take over the properties that have been foreclosed on? You know, who's going to be bailed out? Because we've got people now saying, well, you know, we could bail out all this stuff. I don't know where they come up with a number of $60 billion and saying, you know, that's just 8% of the military budget, the defense budget. I don't know where they come up with that. How do they know how many small individual landlords are have a big balloon note that's going to come due, and if they're not able to pay that off because you know they can't get somebody in who's willing to pay, they can't throw them out if the people are unable or even unwilling to pay. They don't even have to show that they're unable to pay. They just don't do it, and you can't kick them out. Then you know, what do you do about that? How do you even determine that? But your question was who's going to get these properties? I think we kind of understand who's going to get this, don't we?
Yes.
Yeah.
And who are they looking to put in these properties?
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that in the last collapse, which was after 2008, Fairfax County, Virginia, very quietly, their government went out and took over some of these homes around their county that had been foreclosed on. And they allowed, let's say, immigrants or homeless people, whomever qualified in their eyes, to just take over the properties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I didn't hear anybody in that county over there say, my God, what are my tax dollars going for?
Yes.
So that's already begun.
Yes.
Everything's, as you keep saying, this did not happen yesterday.
That's right. And look at how much they're focused on the local stuff, because over the last year, we have seen them focusing, the Democrats are saying, well, we need to control election rules, you know, which is always something that's done by the state level. We need to go into different neighborhoods, and we need to be able to control zoning in different neighborhoods from Washington. From Washington, we need to be able to set up the different congressional zones to do the gerrymandering from Washington. They understand that everything is at the state and local level, and they're trying to repeatedly push the federal government into that sphere to regulate those things because they don't trust it's easier for them to do it directly and centrally from Washington than it is even for them to get surrogates elected at the local level. Of course, you know, Soros has worked very hard, spending millions of dollars to get district attorneys put in locally. We see the fruit of that in San Francisco, as you got the district attorney there that was put in by Soros saying, yeah, go ahead, you know, steal every trip that you take to the store, you can take $1,000. You know, take it, dump it, come back, and get another $1,000. That's not a problem. Those people are victims, he says. Victims of a difficult life, perhaps.
Well, and going back to Soros or anyone who's pushing certain candidates into office, that also kind of ties into where I discussed in my last book how the Republican Party may refuse to run people in certain districts for certain kinds of races, and that's an automatic allowance of someone to come in and take it.
Yeah, that's right.
So Soros doesn't even really have to put up big money for these people.
And one of the things
I've noticed.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I've noticed here recently in Virginia, because we've got a governor's race coming up, And I've always looked at my friends and said, look, this Republican is really like a Mitt Romney. He's got the same kind of education. He's got the same kind of background. One person I know who recently asked me what I thought of this guy, Youngkin, I told him, I said, he's another Mitt Romney. And then he looked at me and explained how he had this extensive business exchange with him years ago. And he looked at me, he said, Vince, when I heard he was running for governor as a Republican, I was shocked.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in Virginia, I don't see any Terry McAuliffe sign.
Yeah.
Be able to see these signs for the Democrats in the usual suspects' yards and places where they had the big signs. I see that. So they may be allowing this Mitt Romney to just take the office, but we already know that the Republicans are not really running enough candidates to take control of the House.
Yeah.
So everything's going to still remain in the globalist control here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Terry McAuliffe, a long history with the Clintons. He's been a former governor there, but he had a lot of corruption involving pay-to-play for Chinese immigrants coming in, investing in some of the green schemes that he had, the greenwashing things that he had, and some solar stuff that was all just a way to launder money for people to buy their citizenship. And of course, we got a Chinese general here in Texas buying massive amount of farmland. But before, I don't want to get away from the property stuff too far, because you pointed out, as I did earlier this week, why are we seeing such an intense propaganda campaign against private property? Why is that now an evil thing? We're seeing two things in the mainstream media. We've got headline after headline after headline saying you don't want to own a house anymore. It makes you a bad person. Literally saying it makes you a bad person. And at the same time, over the last week, we've had the radical Marxist wing, or maybe I should say the most radical Marxist wing of the Democrat Party, pushing the idea that they needed to extend this moratorium on evictions indefinitely. And what that is that's just taking away private property rights, federalizing private property. That's really what this is, isn't it, Vince?
Yes. And we can call it federalizing, but it's really Soviet in design.
Yeah, that's right.
In the end, I mean, if you really look at what happened in I'll tell you, this is somebody using the best of the Nazis and the best of the Soviets against us all together. And that's one of these questions I ask where I make a reference to Nazis and Soviets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's not just one particular version. To get people out of their homes, of course, they're going to put these guys in bankruptcy. You lined it up correctly. The guys or the people who are always talking about making investment property. Now is the time to get investment property. Well, you may get your foot stuck in the door when it comes time to say, oh, by the way, forbearance is gone and we're still keeping renters free on the land. That means they're squatters now.
That's right.
And
that's right.
You're going to go bankrupt. You're going to lose everything. And that property will just be declared somewhere down the road by the government as it's theirs.
Yes.
And these people will live in it.
Yes.
And if you don't comply.
Yeah. What they'll do is they'll turn it over at some point in time. They'll turn it over to the Black Rocks and the banks and so forth, as we saw in the past.
Well, if they do that, then that's very fascist.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
the fascist model.
That's right.
I don't know if they're going for the full fascist model or if they're going for the full Soviet model, which is the actual government coming and taking it. That could be a double cross of some kind down the road.
All right.
But here we are,
And that is the thing. When we talk about this and you use these labels of Nazis or communists or whatever, or fascist or whatever, it is just the bottom line is that when you look at life under either one of these systems, whether it is fascist Nazism or whether it's Soviet communism, it's still the same thing. It's a totalitarian society. The difference is how they get there and the lies that they tell people. And so in a sense, it's kind of like arguing that, the Republicans are good and the Democrats are bad or vice versa. You've got a lot of people who want to defend one or the other of these totalitarian systems. There is no defense for either one of them. And ultimately, they're headed for the same place. That's even what Hitler said. He said, Stalin made a mistake because he took everything at the beginning. And he isn't capable of running it. I'm going to let these other people run it while I control it. And that'll be the last thing I do is be to slit their throats. And so, but you're getting to the same place one way or the other.
We're You know, 100 years ago, Russia went through a civil war between the Bolsheviks and the white, you know, the white army. And the Bolsheviks decided that they would starve the country. That was 100 years ago. And you may recall that Herbert Hoover, a man who was tied into both Democrats and Republicans at the time, came to their rescue, got the American people to start giving them food and whatever to take to there. And the people from the United States who went to Russia to help them found out that a lot of the grain that was just held back was sitting in boxcars on the railways, rotting.
Oh, yeah.
And the excuse was Lenin used is they had to go out and take the grain that was left for seed and take that. So that began the starvation. Meanwhile, they blamed it on, the railroads weren't running. And the engineers were standing there saying, we've been told not to run the trains.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Right. Are we in the same kind of situation where now part of our economy is being bullied into submission here? And now you have the owners of property bullied into submission here. So these guys aren't using guns. They're using the economy.
That's right. That's right.
If you want to look at what you talk about pro-vax, anti-vax, and this is very important, I think. The last few days, I've heard some conservative talk radio here in the Washington area, and there seems to be a narrative popping up. And it's, look, I'm pro-vax. I believe in vaccines, but don't come on my show and tell me that you don't believe in vaccines.
Yep.
So the guy frames it as, I'm a federalist, and if you're against me, you're an anti-federalist. Ooh, okay, you know where I'm going there.
Mm-hmm.
How long has that kind of dichotomy gone on? It's not new.
That's right. Yeah, we got the guy who said, I'm not anti-vax, I'm anti-authoritarian, the shop owner in New York. But, you know, hey, you don't understand how they're rolling this out. You got Rand Paul saying the same thing. Vaccines are great, you know, parroting Mark Siegel, because, you know, the pharmaceutical companies want, via Scott Gottlieb, the former FDA commissioner under Trump, who's now sitting on the board of Pfizer, Scott Gottlieb, Mark Siegel, and Rand Paul, apparently, want you to see a benefit from the vaccines. Don't put masks on the faces of people who've had the vaccines. That should buy you something, right? So there should be some value, because they can't illustrate that the vaccines are doing anything to protect anybody from any disease. And they've got their own risks, which they're trying desperately to hide. So they talk about the vaccine as being a positive, good thing, and we've got to stop beating people with sticks. But the Democrats just can't stop doing that, because it's in their nature to beat people with sticks. So that's really where the two factions are. You know, yeah, we can talk about liberty, and we can talk about, I don't want to have vaccine passports, but don't you dare criticize the vaccine. That's where we are with the Republicans.
It puts you in a box, though. When they sit there and say that they're pro-vax, that means if you're anything else, then you're anti-vax.
That's right. And
that may not be the case,
but it
puts you in that box.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to go on to just one more little piece there out of this, and maybe the next one. The Nazis back in the 30s, and especially during the 40s, when they were marching across Europe, and they would take control, or governments would join with them. Hungary is one of those. The French, the Vichy French, is one of those. They would begin taking census of the people in their cities and the towns. And that's where they were looking for Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And also, not just Jews, they were looking for Christians or enemies of the state, and you name it, anybody they could put on their list. And in the case of Paris, and I'm going by Robert Clary's autobiography, they would come by one day and see who was in this building. And then they'd be back in a day or so with the trucks and haul them off.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that was going on basically all over Europe. And then you can look to Hungary and see where, this is 1944, I think, that very famous, awful thing. They mowed down 80,000 Jews in Hungary. basically in a couple of days, they would take their census, find the Jews, walk them down to the Danube River, and machine gun them into the river because they knew they were losing the war. So obviously, as you know, we all hear about when the enemy is really getting nervous, they really get active.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, when you look at that, Vince, you know, it really is a couple of things that are going on with this. Number one, for the life of the state, you have to have a common enemy, right? Yeah. And then the second thing is that you want to have a reign of terror to keep everybody in line. And so that was really the key part of that. But, of course, they did engender true hatred. And we're seeing all of those aspects right now as part of the so-called pandemic. You've got to have a common enemy that's now becoming the unvaccinated. You have to have a reign of terror. We're going to take everything from you. We're going to lock you down, destroy everything in your life. And then you, at the same time, you're engendering genuine hatred of people at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can see that. You said with this door-to-door campaign. Well, that's what the Nazis did.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry that these people think that they have the right and the power to do this. They don't. They know it, but this is the problem. We're under this revolution, David, and I'm asking the American people, why aren't you getting off your butts? Even like the rest of the world, I have to say it. We're going to be doomed if we don't get off our butts.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. There was a small demonstration in Raleigh. I'll just show this to people. Not too far from where you are in Virginia, I guess. This was happening, some people saying Roy Cooper is an idiot because he's pushing the vaccine passport. Hundreds of people that showed up. You got people going by honking the horns, but it should be hundreds of thousands of people who are showing up. We're going to have to get people out there at the levels that we've seen in France and in Germany. You need to protest this stuff, folks. You need to disobey it civilly, but you've got to protest this as well. I'm not seeing any protests happening in New York as de Blasio is beginning his reign of terror.
One of the things, too, I know, having talked to some people who have taken the experimental vaccines, and I won't call them a vaccine. If I can always catch myself, it's experimental vaccine.
Yeah, it's the Trump shots.
Those people, yeah, well, Trump shots, okay. Yeah.
The warped shots. There we go. Go ahead, sorry.
They don't want to hear about how sick they may be getting or that they might get sick. And I understand that. I get that from them. But they also have to understand that if they really support our position of not wanting to take these things, they need to be vocal with us. And
that's right.
We, as people who may choose to act locally and maybe try to start new governments locally or for the state, each state individually, that we are compassionate because we are. I know all of these people. They're always looking for the natural way to solve this problem or that problem. And nutraceuticals are parts of our lives. You know, your life's been changed by it. My life's been changed by it.
Yeah, that's right.
So these people who have now awakened that this thing that's in their body may be trying to kill them have to understand that going back to the very same monster that convinced them to take it is probably not going to try to help you out of it.
That's right. That's
so
right.
We need to embrace these people. Yeah, they're going to say, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to hear about it. But just tell them, you're not lying. People are getting sick. People have died. Mm-hmm. And not from this thing that I got to tell you, David. The more you look at it, where are the pictures of this bug?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
We haven't seen this bug.
That's right.
And all of the people who died in those retirement homes and the hospitals that were closed up petri dishes, how do we know that they weren't administered something that really would get them sick?
That's right.
I mean, here you have guys using anti-parasitic drugs to get people healthy, and they were getting healthy. But the government was coming down on these doctors, not necessarily the pharmaceutical company.
Yes.
So somebody was figuring it out outside of the algorithm. And that generates the obvious response from the governments. And that is to come down.
I've watched these people manipulate unemployment figures. I've watched them manipulate inflation figures for years. Just amazing what they choose to report, how they adjust the numbers and so forth. And I watched Fauci and the CDC do the same thing with the flu shots. And so, you know, this is an MO for these people. They do this type of thing all the time. And whether or not you agree with this vaccine, though, it's like the guy, the shop owner. We have to understand right now, and I think we've got an opportunity right now because everybody's kind of scratching their head, even the people who were the low-hanging fruit that took this stuff at the very beginning, trusting everything that the government said. They're looking at this and saying, wait a minute, you guys are reversing your information. Now you're telling me that I'm not protected against anything. You told me that we had to get this vaccine so that we wouldn't spread it. Now you're telling me that we are spreaders even with a vaccine. On and on and on. This is a vulnerable moment for them if we will speak up and speak out. And this is why they're stepping up the censorship, and it is why they're stepping up the authoritarian tactics to try to intimidate people and say, you don't want to be part of that crowd because I'm going to come after those people. We need to all stand up now and hang together, or we're going to hang separately. That's what's coming. And now is an opportunity for us to do this. Right now is a great opportunity because the emperors have no credibility anymore. They've just burned it big time.
Yeah, they're definitely in a transition period from one level to the next. Now is, that's almost like catching the fighter pilot when he's landing in World War II. That's when those guys were most susceptible to be mm-hmm. taken out by our guys. They figured that out.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in a transition period. They're refueling on the decks of the carriers in the Battle of Midway. That's where we're at now.
Yeah, that's right. Well, is there anything you want to tell us about what's happening there in Virginia? And anything, any updates that you want to give people or shout-outs about something that's going to happen? Or they should follow you at Gab. What's the best way for people to keep in touch?
What we decided quite a few weeks ago, now this group called the Middle Virginia Freeholders, we're a loosely affiliated group of people who are trying to follow the steps of the Sons of Liberty. If you read your history, you know who those guys were. They were people like Patrick Henry and George Mason, John Adams, Sam Adams, Ben Franklin. But it took them quite a few years to get together and convince a lot of people what to do. And it wasn't until things like Concord and Lexington came along that started to really galvanize the public, that they knew that there was a problem. But there were places like Boston that were having it first. And we decided to go ahead and try to give people a platform to speak, because we've seen already, if you go to these public meetings of supervisors or city councils, and if they don't like what you say, we've seen them even here in Virginia, they just close the meeting and arrest people.
That's right. That's right.
Ridiculous in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even want to get into that because that's a whole other ball of wax. But
well, that's a good idea. I mean, you're giving people an opportunity to basically hone their rhetorical skills and speaking skills, right? Because that's going
to
be important.
Well, not just that, but to participate together. Now, we did this back in the Tea Party days. When the Tea Party first came about, we had big rallies, some of them over here in Manassas, almost 2,000 people sitting around on this big stretch of grass. We couldn't believe it. We gave people an open microphone, and they were lined up, David, 50 of them. But we also saw that these candidates and politicians showed up.
Yeah.
Now, back then, I was not happy with that. I didn't think that's what we were going to be doing. But somehow that's how that all ended up, being a support group for Republicans. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think that was right. So in this group meeting where we decided to hold this Freedom Festival, and that's what we called it, and this was before your friend actually held his. We had already been talking about it. We decided not to allow candidates or politicians to speak. This is for us. It's for the people. And we will make available a sign-up sheet for people who want to join the Congress of Counties. And we're going to get this thing rolling, David. And I suspect because of the way that they are coming down on all of us, that mm-hmm. it's going to really happen. I'm really excited about this.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, yeah, and again, people can find you on Gab. Tell people again where that is on Gab.
That's going to be... We can look up New Government, and it should show New Government at spirit_of_Mason on Gab.
Mm-hmm.
Should be able to find it. Also, the book, you know, my book, The Public Wheel in You, is still free. The electronic version is still free.
Okay, good.
That has a code that has to go with it. I do have that up. It's pinned on the Gab site.
Excellent.
So that's pinned up there.
Excellent.
Can I read you a poem out of the book?
Sure. Go ahead.
It's a poem based off of Martin Niemöller's poem when he was in a concentration camp. And I thought perhaps what would it look like today if we were having the same issue and we were sitting inside of a concentration camp, which Lord knows we may be getting to that position.
FEMA camp is what it's going to be.
Well,
it's starting to look more and more like that.
Originally, we're calling it.
Yeah, that's right.
It could be a vax camp or something like that.
That's right. Go to vaccination camp.
Yeah. So
go ahead.
So this would be, they came for the unborn, and I didn't object, for it was not my problem. They came for free speech from the pulpit, and I didn't object, for I was no longer a believer in God. They came for my election integrity, and I didn't object, for the people who we voted for never paid any mind to our constitutions. They came with medical straw men for our ability to make a living, and I didn't object, for I made a living from the government or my retirement or what I was told I deserved from those who have, while I have not. They came to kill the elderly with poison drugs and rid us of our beloved ones, and I didn't object, for I was not an elderly person. They came for the guns, and I didn't object, for I was not a gun owner. They came to jab my body with poisons that could kill me, and because none of us previously came together to support and save the other people who were taken down before me, there was no one else left to object for me.
That's right. Well, well said. Well said. Thank you for joining us. And again, people can find this at, it's newgovernment_@spiritofmason. Is there an underscore between Spirit of Mason?
Or is it that is word? Spirit. Yeah, Spirit underscore of underscore Mason.
Good.
My apologies. I didn't really know the format when I got on that page.
Okay, so. Sure. Well, I'll try to find it. I'll try to find it myself on Gab. And so that's where you can find Vince. And again, Vince is focused on local solutions, and I heartily recommend his book to you. Give you a historical perspective of how important that is. Yes, Vince, go ahead.
Here's that code if you want to get that book, the electronic book, free.
Okay, good.
You have to use BN Public 22, and that instruction is also on the Gab page.
All right, good, good. We'll try to put that in. Okay. You want us to put that in the video of the interview as well, the description?
Sure.
All right, great.
Sure.
We'll do that. Thank you so much, Vince Agnelli. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to be right back. I want to read you a very heartbreaking letter from one of our listeners about a teenager he knows and the heart issues that immediately came from the vaccine, and it is a prayer request, so please stay with us. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, I want to read to you an email that was sent to me from a listener. This is from Joe. I won't give the full name here, but he says, Dear David, I've been listening to you for about 2 years. He goes on to say, I'm reaching out to you because I have a coworker that his son was pressured into getting the mRNA jab by his girlfriend's mom. It can come from a lot of different places. Be pressure to travel, pressure to go to school, pressure to have a job, pressure to date by the girlfriend's mom. She told the young man, who was only 19, that he couldn't go into the house if he wasn't vaccinated. That was her words, quote unquote. He got jabbed on Friday. My coworker received a call about 11 a.m. Monday. His wife was rushing his son to the hospital. His left arm and right leg went numb. He was also suffering from what he believes was a heart attack. He promptly dropped everything and went to join his son. I don't know his condition at this time. I've said a prayer for him, and I'm hoping for the best. And so I don't have a name, but God knows who that is. Co-worker of Joe and his son, who is the one who had the immediate reaction to the vaccine. And, of course, this doesn't happen at all, right? We're told this doesn't happen. As a matter of fact, as I look at this toxic injection, I'll circle back to this as we look at what the press is having to say. But I saw this yesterday on Twitter in response to one of these tweets that somebody had about their concern about the toxic jabs. Person said, this is a person that goes by the name of Marie, I am happy to report that I have now received my second jab of Pfizer with absolutely no side effects. Apart from that sore arm, which, by the way, lasts no more than a day or two. So that's my bit done. When do I get my vaccine passport? And again, this is under a discussion, people talking about vaccines. So I've done my part. I've served society, and now I want my little gold star. Well, you know, I responded to that, and I said, retweeted that with a comment. I said, the better question is, when do I know that I'm safe from long-term adverse effects? I said, remember, Fauci and Slaoui's last dance together was on a rushed pandemic was the Pandemrix vaccine. And I said, look it up. I said, permanent effects showed up a year later. It showed up first in kids. Usually it takes longer. Usually it takes so long that they can't reliably tie it. They can have plausible deniability. But for Pandemrix, it was a problem for them because it showed up after only 1 year. If you want to look at the vaccine adverse effects reporting system that the CDC runs, you might realize that now we have the best documented adverse reactions we've ever seen, with all of the others combined over the last several decades from the Trump shots. But I said, I hope you're lucky. And I mean that sincerely. I hope she doesn't have that. But all these people who have dodged the bullet, I'm reminded by what Winston Churchill said. He said, nothing is more exhilarating than to be shot at without result. And I think it's nothing is more exhilarating than for these people to take this toxic vaccine and say, look, I didn't drop dead. I'm good. He said, now I want my gold star and all the rest of the keys to society. I'm off to New York City. Here we go. Boy, going to live it up there on Broadway. For $1 a day, that's what it would take. $1 a day. A double-blind ivermectin study reveals COVID patients recover more quickly and are less infectious. Now, this is a double-blind study that was done in Israel, where, if you remember, Benjamin Netanyahu turned over the entire population as lab rats for Pfizer. Put us at the front of the list, and we will vaccinate everybody. And they're ahead of everybody else in terms of vaccination, and they're ahead of everybody else now in terms of people who vaccinated getting sick. This is somebody who basically paid for this inexpensive drug, this trial. And it was a small trial because they're paying for it themselves. They had 81 volunteers over the age of 18 who had tested positive for coronavirus. And what they did was they set it up as a double-blind study. Half of them, they would give a placebo. The other half, they would give ivermectin. What they found was that 83% of the participants were symptomatic at the time that they recruited them. So 17% had no symptoms, but they failed the PCR test of magnification. The other 83% had symptoms. 13% of the patients had comorbidities of things like cardiovascular disease, high blood pressure, cancer, diabetes, chronic respiratory disease. The median age of the patients was 35. They ranged in age from 20 to 71 years old. Treatment was discontinued on the third day. They only did 3 days of this $1 a day ivermectin. Patients were monitored every 2 days thereafter. By day six, 72% of those treated with ivermectin tested negative for the virus versus 50% of those who had received the placebo. So 50% of the people had their immune system stopped it, right? But it worked even better for the people who got ivermectin. It was like three quarters. Meanwhile, only 13% of the ivermectin patients were able to infect other people after 6 days, compared to 50% of the placebo group. So people who are contagious, only 13% of the ivermectin group versus 50% of the control group. Three patients in the placebo group were admitted to the hospital for respiratory symptoms, while only one ivermectin patient was hospitalized the day the study began. Not after they took the ivermectin. And remember, we go back to that story of that 80-plus-year-old lady who was on a ventilator, an intubation. Her family were able to give her ivermectin after just a couple of days. She's setting up the same thing here. 3 days later, we're no sign of it, right? The person who began, the day the study began, was put into the hospital, was discharged 1 day later and sent back to the hotel in good condition. There's almost 100% chance that a person will be non-infectious in 4 to 6 days with ivermectin. Again, this is an article on Zero Hedge if you want to look this up. Ivermectin is incredibly cheap due to its widespread use across the world to treat malaria, scabies, lice, other parasitic infections. In Bangladesh, the cost of ivermectin is about 60 cents to $1.80 for a 5-day course. How much does Fauci's standard of care cost? Remdesivir, right? That's the standard care. How much does that cost for a course? This, again, is anywhere from 60 cents to $1.80 for a 5-day course. They only did a 3-day course here in Jerusalem, in Israel. No, it was in Jerusalem. I don't know which town it was in. Anyway, 60 cents to $1.80 versus remdesivir. What does it cost? $3,100. $3,100. That's right. This is a financially incentivized pandemic of medical malpractice. This is unbridled greed that is killing people. There's no reason for a vaccine. There's no reason people have to be, we have to overcrowd the hospitals. This could easily be handled with something that is unbelievably cheap with a very long history of being used. But we criminalize that. If you discuss this, big tech will censor you. You'll be deplatformed. And they're doing that in collaboration with the Biden administration, as this article points out, as we all know, right? Ivermectin has been actively opposed by the World Health Organization, the FDA, and all the pharmaceutical companies, and all the government, and all the big tech censors, all the president's men, and all the king's men. And you know what? Their failed narrative, if we get this truth out, will be just like Humpty Dumpty, and they can't put him together again. Meanwhile, Merck, which manufactured the drug in the 1980s, has come out big time against it, against using ivermectin. One of the things they said was there's no meaningful evidence or clinical activity or clinical efficacy in patients with COVID-19 disease. Why? Because they wouldn't run a study. This person did it on their own. And they said, and there's a concerning lack of safety data in the majority of the studies. What? Are you kidding me? Merck hasn't done any study of its own ivermectin that they gave out literally billions of doses to people back in the 1960s. And they want to say that this is something that is dangerous and they don't know what the safety of this is? You don't know the safety profile of this? Well, are you doing a mea culpa? You know better than this. They said a billion people took it. They gave it to them. It's a real shame, said Schwartz, the person who was running this study in Israel. He said, you would think that Merck would be happy to hear that ivermectin might be helpful to corona patients that try to study it, but they're the ones most loudly declaring that the drug should not be used. And again, I have talked about it several times because I still cannot believe that they were so brazenly open about this, but it was something that the mainstream media didn't talk about really, and I'm about the only one I've heard report about this. But going back to the spring of 2018, there was an article, and it was Goldman Sachs scolding the pharmaceutical industry. The case that they used was Gilead's treatment of of hepatitis, a particular strain of hepatitis. I forget which letter it was. But it was very effective. And they said, well, that's great. You know, you made $12 billion the first year. But then look at what happened to sales after that. They said, our business model, Goldman Sachs told big pharmaceutical companies in spring of 2018 in an article, said, our business model is not curing diseases. Our business model is chronic disease treatment. This is why you see what's happening in the cancer industry as well. They don't want to cure anything. They want chronic diseases that you keep buying. More and more shots. We've got to have a third shot now, right? That is their business model. They've learned the lesson very well. Goldman Sachs, these greedy bankers, meet with the merchants of death, big pharmaceutical companies, and between the two of them and the other people who are willing to kill you and to lock you up, your own governments everywhere around the world. That's why this is rolling out. Twitter suspends a journalist who repeated the CDC's facts about vaccines. This is Greg Piper, who writes for Just the News. The story included the line, vaccines are not safe for everyone. So I said, that's it, you're done. This is Jonathan Turley talking about it. He said, reminiscent of the suspension of writer Alex Berenson after he posted public health results of a Pfizer vaccine trial. Don't put out. I had the same thing. I had tweets that were locked up when I published information from CDC's VAERS database. And so, you know, do not give the information from Pfizer itself or from the CDC. What the CDC said, CDC, says Jonathan Turley, has a site that is titled, quote, who should not get vaccinated with these vaccines? And it stresses because of age, health conditions, or other factors, some people should not get certain vaccines or should wait before getting them. And they offer a list of people who have a high risk of severe illness from the vaccine. However, when this guy, Greg Piper, saw it, he noted, therefore, in conclusion, because, you know, we summarize things on Twitter, vaccines are not safe for everyone. That's exactly what the CDC was saying. So then Twitter hit him with a suspension for spreading misinformation. And again, I tell you, when Twitter or Gulag or any of these people, Zuckerberg, when any of them say, accuse you of misinformation, what they're talking about is information that the public missed. Because it was hidden from them deliberately by big tech, big pharma, big bank. And so, you know, it's the corporate view of truth. It is the prerogative of the censor, as Turley says. Johnson & Johnson's vaccine recipients can now get supplemental Pfizer or Moderna doses at San Francisco. Remember, it was only a year ago that you had the first CDC forms that were being sent out to three states and one city, talking about how we need to have all this information to track the vaccine recipients because we've got to make sure that which vaccine they get, Pfizer or Moderna. We don't want to mix these things, and we've got to make sure they get it on the 30-day anniversary. And then, of course, what was really suspicious about that, in case you think, well, that's reasonable, they also wanted to know from the health providers all of the personal information about the people who refused to take the vaccine. Ah, now we've got something other than just trying to help people make sure they get the same vaccine. But now they don't care. Now you mix and match the vaccines. Got a Pfizer? Well, that's good. You want to have a Moderna instead? Would you like a Moderna for your next course of toxic injections? Or would you prefer, after we said that you had the Johnson & Johnson, would you like to mix in a little bit of Pfizer or Moderna with that? I mean, you know, really, seriously, when are we going to do that? As a matter of fact, let's just... Well, that's not hooked up there. I was going to play you Stephen Colbert's video there. You know, cheering Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson. Hey, let's mix them all together. And you can go to, wait for it, I didn't know that this was a thing. There is a Zuckerberg San Francisco General Hospital. don't take me there, please. Don't take me to the Zuckerberg Hospital. Zuckerberg's got a hospital named after him. Johnson & Johnson recipients can make a special request to get a supplemental dose of an mRNA vaccine. So there you go. Can you make a special request at the Zuckerberg General Hospital? Can you make a special request if you are a terminal cancer patient to get an experimental cancer treatment? Well, no, you can't. No, not going to allow that. But, you know, if you want to be a guinea pig, you know, for the COVID vaccine or the Trump shots or whatever, we welcome and even demand guinea pigs for the Trump shots. the Hill. Majority of unvaccinated incorrectly believe that vaccine poses a bigger risk than COVID itself. Well, of course it does, because they said they found that 53% of the unvaccinated respondents think that getting the vaccine is a bigger risk to their health than the virus itself. Well, that is especially true if you're young. You have a zero risk, and so any risk, and they admit that it does have a risk, even if they'll tell you that it's extremely small, there is a risk. It is a non-zero risk. And so you should be aware of that. They said the poll comes. They can't believe this. I said, look at this. These stupid vaccinated people think the risk is higher if you take a vaccine than it is if you just wait and take your chances with the COVID, right? So the poll results came back after the CDC updated its mask recommendations for fully vaccinated people to wear masks in indoor spaces in high-risk areas. So maybe maybe the people at the Hill ought to consider that maybe when the CDC says you can still get the vaccine and you're still going to have to wear the mask and you can still transmit it to people and all this other, so it's like, and you've probably seen the meme, I retweeted it, as a matter of fact. They go down, they say vaccinated and unvaccinated in a column. And then they have it checked off, you know, can get the thing, can get sick from the thing, can transmit the thing, whatever the thing is. And then there's only one area there where there's a difference. And that is that the vaccinated can die or have special, adverse effects from the vaccine. That can't happen to the unvaccinated. So, yeah, it is a worse risk. You know, Bob Odenkirk, you may remember him. He's an actor, Better Call Saul. I think it's very clever writing. For years and years, I never watched Breaking Bad because, like, I absolutely do not want to watch something about a drug dealer. And there were some scenes in it that you may feel inappropriate for your family. But it was really a very interesting character study and a very interesting plot. It wasn't really a celebration at all of selling drugs or using drugs. You see these people's lives gradually going down this path. They think they're going in a good direction, but you see the results of what is happening to them, the bad results of what happens to them. But it was an interesting series, and so they had the prequel, a spinoff of that, Better Call Saul. Bob Odenkirk plays a lawyer, and you watch him go down a bad path. They were filming the final season of this, which was delayed because of production shutdown last year. And a week ago, he had a heart attack and collapsed on the set. And so over the weekend, you know, a lot of people said, heart attack, did he get vaccinated? Well, it turns out he did. He talked about it. It was 4 months ago, however. So now you have all these articles saying, oh, these anti-vaxxers are pushing a conspiracy theory. Well, what conspiracy would there be? I know there was a conspiracy for pharmaceutical companies to get paid massive amounts of money, hold them harmless from any liability, ship it out with the military and all this other thing. All right. We know about that conspiracy. That's pretty open. And I think it's criminal. But when you look at this and say, well, it was 4 months ago. Does it have to happen right away? I mean, we know that the spike protein, which is what the mRNA is producing, we know the spike protein creates cardiovascular issues as well as other issues. It doesn't have to happen immediately, as it did with that young man that I just told you about. And as a matter of fact, when that happened, you had Bryan Cranston, who played the lead in Breaking Bad, played Walter White, or Heisenberg, if you will. He tweeted out and said, well, he's super strong, super fit guy and everything. He's 58 years old, so now people are saying it's because he's 58 years old. And because there's 4 months there, there's no connection. Let me ask you this. Because this article debunking it, IB Times, International Business Times, says, well, according to the CDC, the only side effects of a Trump shot, they call it a COVID vaccine, the only side effects of a Trump shot include cold or flu-like symptoms and soreness and mild swelling at the injection site, apart from allergic reactions, which may occur in some rare cases. Do you really believe that? I mean, what bold-faced lies were being given by these people who were involved in a criminal conspiracy, people like the International Business Times? If they're going to tell you that kind of stuff, they're involved in a conspiracy. They're conspiring to lie to you. You can go to the CDC site and you can see it yourself on theirs. That is not what half a million people in the U.S. and 1.5 million people abroad have experienced as adverse effects. Death is one of them. About 12,000 people in the U.S., about 20,000 abroad have already been reported. But no, it's just some mild swelling at the site of the injection. That's it. That's all you have to worry about. So, of course, these people are crazy. You can't have any kind of heart issues with it. And let me tell you, do you really think about this, do you really believe that it's only 18-year-old football players who are having heart attacks from the vaccines? Or this 18-year-old boy who wanted to date a girl? Do you believe it's only the young people who are having it? Or do you believe that they say that because they can't explain it away like they can with somebody who's 58 years old, even though he's in very good shape and had no prior history of any of this, right? They can explain it away. They can say he's 58 years old or he's got other comorbidities. You can't explain it for the 18-year-old high school player, football player. But they say they're the only ones who are having that issue because they're lying to you. They just can't come up with another justification for those. So I hope he gets well, and we wish him good luck, and we hope that people will expose this. Back in March when he had it, he said, we're all so thrilled to be back here in New Mexico. We love shooting in Albuquerque, but there's a lot of precautions that Sony is putting in. We have to have social distancing. We have people in zones. We're wearing masks until the last second when the cameras start rolling. They say many of their crew members have already been vaccinated as a condition for a job. We've gone over, so I'm going to continue to go just a little bit longer here. Forgot to say goodbye to those carrying us at Aftermath. But we're going to continue to go with this. A band that goes by the name of Offspring has now booted its drummer for refusal to get the COVID vaccine, even though he has natural immunity. He said, since I am unable to comply with what is increasingly becoming an industry mandate, it has recently been decided that I am unsafe to be around, either in the studio or on tour. I mention this because you won't be seeing me at these upcoming shows. I also want to be able to share my story so that anyone else experiencing the agony and the isolation of getting left behind right now knows that they're not entirely alone. He had had COVID, he said, more than a year ago. He was medically advised not to take the vaccine due to his personal medical history and his side effect profile. He has a history of Guillain-Barré syndrome. And, of course, the CDC has warned people who have a history of Guillain-Barré syndrome. Even the CDC says, well, for you people, you might not want to do this. That is a common side effect of a lot of different vaccines, not just these. Anyway, because of a background of that and a serious but rare immune disorder linked to multiple vaccines, including these, Parada said that he was confident that he could handle the virus again, but could not handle another round of post-vaccination Guillain-Barré syndrome, which dates back to his childhood and has become progressively worse over his lifetime, as do these other vaccine-related incidents, which, again, because it rolls out very slowly in most cases, they can claim plausible deniability. He said, for me, the risks far outweigh the benefits. In a series of tweets, he said he unequivocally supports informed consent. Quote, which necessitates choice, unburdened by coercion. That's right. Don't talk to me about choice when you're pushing me, trying to coerce me. To dictate that a person recovered from COVID-19 with natural immunity also have to submit to a vaccine without scientific evidence is nothing but hubris. If you have no proof that people who acquired natural immunity are getting or transmitting the disease in real numbers, then perhaps you should just be quiet, he said. Said another person. That's not Pete Parada. That's another individual who was commenting on that, a medical doctor who is affiliated with Children's Health Defense. Let me say it's not just hubris. This is ignorance or deliberate lies, because a vaccine, as I point out many times, and I want people to use this as an argument, the purpose of a vaccine is not to stop a disease. That's the definition of a therapeutic. If you have a disease or if you have a condition, a therapeutic is there to ameliorate or cure that, right? To make it better. It's called a therapeutic. It gives you therapy. A vaccine, in theory, regardless of how it actually works, in theory, a vaccine is there to train your immune system. Whether you have a vaccine or not, it's your immune system that will stop the disease if you don't have a therapeutic to aid you in that. So it's the vaccine. The purpose of the vaccine is to train your immune system. If your immune system has withstood an exposure, an attack of a disease, then you have what's called natural immunity. Your immune system has already been trained by the real thing, and natural immunity is not inferior to artificial immunity. It is superior to it. It lasts for an entire lifetime because you've been exposed to the actual thing, not to a fake imitation of the thing. Real quickly, since we've gone over, I'm going to go a little bit further here. America held hostage. We have, we've seen just this last week, we've been held hostage. Trump, as he's blasting these new mask mandates, said, we won't go back. That's right. Not going back to you either. You're the one who made this, who enabled this. Not going back to what America was like under Trump. Not interested at all. But Obama has now decided that he will scale back his 60th birthday party. He was going to have 700 people show up to his elaborate mansion there in Martha's Vineyard that he put into a zone that, if you look at the climate, the sky is falling people, they say that all the area that Obama, because, you know, we're going to have rising waters and everything, that area that he spent millions of dollars with his mansion, that is going to be underwater. And we have these people like Obama who are selling you this doom and gloom about climate. They don't believe it because they're spending millions of dollars. But, of course, he's got lots of millions of dollars. This guy who never had a legitimate job in his life, made all of his money out of politics, became a multi-millionaire. Just like Bernie Sanders, just like Patrice Cullors of BLM, Barack Obama. And so now, you know, a friend of the Hollywood elites, just like Cuomo, he had this scheduled for Saturday. And now they've scaled it back. And it's kind of funny to look at the people who've been disinvited. Many guests were already in transit. Many others were scheduling the required coronavirus tests that they would have to submit to gain entry to the Obama compound. I'm glad they're calling it a compound. Usually they only use that against people that they don't like, but they're doing that here by somebody that they dearly love. But it is a compound in a legitimate sense. They were informed on Tuesday night that they were no longer invited. The New York Post had reported that George Clooney, Steven Spielberg, Oprah Winfrey were all expected to attend. I don't know if they're the ones that he's kicked out, but he did kick out David Axelrod and Rahm Emanuel, who served as the first chief of staff for Obama. He'd planned to attend the bash, but he got a call saying, sorry, don't come. Emanuel then joked to Marty Nesbitt, the former president's close friend and chairman of the Obama Foundation, and said the revoked invitation was an exercise in character building. I told him that we literally got voted off the island. There you go. The Japanese government, meanwhile, has started naming and shaming quarantine rule breakers. Well, you know, here in America, we should start naming and shaming. I've tried to do the best job I can of naming and shaming politicians who have thrown the Constitution away, thrown it into the bin, for their own personal agenda, for the agenda of the pharmaceutical companies. Yes, we should name and shame them. They want to shame us for not getting vaccinated. They want to shame us because we don't obey their medical dictates. But let's understand, they're the ones who are breaking the Constitution. They're the ones who are breaking the rules. They don't get to act like arbitrary dictators, not under our system of government. And once they do, they no longer have legitimate authority. I had a friend from Japan who talked about how important consensus was and peer pressure in Japan. They had a saying, and it said, the nail that sticks up will be hammered down. Are they going to hammer you down for sticking up and sticking out? That's not our system here. When they hammer you down, stand up again. Every time they hammer you down. The Hill has an article that says America's pandemic of COVID hypocrisy. And I thought, oh, that's good, you know, except listen to the way they define hypocrisy. They said there are two pandemics in America. One is COVID-19. The other is a toxic infection of political hypocrisy related to the disease. Yes, I would agree with that. A lot of that around. Yeah, we're going to make everybody that comes in on an airplane be vaccinated, not even test negative. You must be vaccinated to come into America, says Biden. Meanwhile, we have 8,500 people, 1,500 of them in the last week. Well, we're not going to, you know, we'll test you after you come in. And then if you test positive, we got 8,500 people, 1,500 in the last week that just let out. Or we put them on buses, or we put them on planes and fly them further into the country. That's some hypocrisy there, isn't it? But that's not the hypocrisy that The Hill is talking about. They said, we can't be precise about how the first pandemic will turn out, COVID-19. But we know exactly how the second one will play out, the political hypocrisy pandemic. They said, leading the list as far as Republican Governor Ron DeSantis. What? So extreme in his views and political ambition that he even sued cruise lines from imposing sensible COVID-19 health rules. You don't need to read any further to know where these people are coming from. The NIH director, Francis Collins, who decided that he would go on and get some of that love, that media love, that Fauci has been getting for quite some time. He got on and he promptly stuck his foot firmly in his mouth as he said this.
There are kids as young as a few months old who are sick from this. That is rare. Certainly younger people are less likely to fall ill. But anybody
statistically zero.
Oh, you don't have to worry about it if you're a young, healthy person.
Statistically zero.
Many counterexamples all around us now.
We've got many counterexamples
so, yeah,
of your safety.
You need to think about it. And that's the reason why the recommendations are.
Now here it comes.
Kids under 12. That they avoid being in places where they might get infected, which means recommendations of mask wearing in schools, and that at home, parents of unvaccinated kids should be thoughtful about this, and the recommendation is to wear masks there as well.
Let me just follow up
on that. I know that's uncomfortable. I know it seems weird, but it is the best way to protect your kid.
Yeah, I know it seems uncomfortable and weird to tell parents that because their kids are unvaccinated, you should wear masks, even if you are vaccinated. I know it's kind of strange, and I'm putting myself out there. This, again, is Fauci's boss making his bid for stardom, and then he had to walk that back as people could absolutely not believe their ears that this guy is lying to them up one side and down the other. Kids who have a zero risk from this statistically, even their own numbers can't support it. Yeah, we need to know why he's doing this.
Show me the money!
Yeah, I think we know what is up with Francis Collins, don't we? He wasn't claiming that parents needed to wear masks around their offspring at home, he insisted. Oh, no. But yet he was. He was. And he says, well, I just kind of misspoke. I garbled that message. No, no, you heard him. He said, I know this seems uncomfortable. I know it sounds weird, but your parents need to wear your mask around your kids. That's what he said. It's the best way to protect your unvaccinated kids. So we had, of course, to remind you of their own statistics, 99.995% chance that the kids are not going to get an infection without their parents wearing a mask. That's the way it's been throughout this entire thing. So you have a 0.005% chance. Mm-hmm. It also noted that there's no evidence that Delta COVID-19 variant causes more deaths or severe illnesses among kids than the other ones did. I can say, when you look at a chance that you've got a 0.005% chance of getting something, I think that is probably the least risk that you could find for your kids of anything that they bothered to collect some statistics on. So as a result, Rand Paul was one of the first ones out of the gate to attack him for this insanity. He said, I called the NIH director stupid. Well, I think that's kind. And I think that's really kind of missing the point. He's corrupt. He knows better than this. He's not stupid. He's criminal. And then you look at what Rand Paul himself has to say. First, he said, there's no science to defend putting your kids in masks or parents wearing masks at home. There is no science whatsoever. He's absolutely true about that. But just like Fox News' Dr. Mark Siegel, who is pushing the vaccine and wants you to get the vaccine to show that it's really great, Rand does not want to have the masks forced on people. He's really big about that. But listen to what else he had to say. Rand Paul, we've got to vaccinate the children. What? But, he says, in reality, I think it's 90% of the people over 65 have been vaccinated. That's extraordinary, and we should be celebrating that. Rand Paul said that. Rand Paul said, we've got to vaccinate the children.
They have to get the shot. The vaccinations are so important.
Yeah, I know. Is he like a little mini-me Trump? Are you kind of sick of all the little mini-me Trumps out there? You know, from Rand Paul to Alex Jones, all these people. They all want to be like Trump. Why? Because Trump is so popular. People send him tens of millions of dollars that he keeps, that he doesn't use to protest a corrupt election that he laid the ground rules for with the lockdown. I am sick of these people in the Republican Party, these little mini-me's pushing the vaccine for everything. This woman says, my own country of Canada, just kick me out. Because my COVID immunity was acquired naturally and not from a vaccine. She tried to go back. She was in Europe working. She came back to visit. And they said, well, you're either going to be put into quarantine for a couple of weeks or we'll let you. This is very generous of them because they have kidnapped people in the past who were trying to come in. I reported the story a few months ago of a family who had gone to America to get some health care because of the rationing in Canada. They were trying to get something done for their grandmother. So it was a grandmother, and it was the mother, and she had two or three daughters. And so as they're coming back, you know, they had to get their tests. And so they get the tests on a Friday, and they're waiting, and they're waiting, and they're waiting. And finally, you know, there was one test that did not come back for the group. And finally, it did come back, and they immediately dashed for the border with a test. They were 2 hours late, 2 hours beyond the 48-hour deadline for the test because of the delay in getting the test results back. Instead of refusing them, as they did this lady, Rachel Marsden, writing for RT, they arrested them all for trying to come in illegitimately into the country and gave them severe fines. This is where we are right now. You've got another Republican besides Rand Paul. Republican Governor Asa Hutchinson says, I wish that this prohibition of mask mandates had not become law. I really regret that because now look at this. We've got a big pandemic coming now, says Governor Asa Hutchinson, Republican governor of Arkansas. A Republican said, do you regret it now? Was it a bad decision? He said, well, you know, everything has changed now. And yes, in hindsight, I wish it had not become law, but it is the law. And the only chance we have is either to amend it or for the courts to say that it has an unconstitutional foundation. So to say that it is unconstitutional to not prohibit people from taking a mask mandate. Let me tell you, we have to have voters react to that kind of stuff. There is a pushback that is put out by RT, and they say, well, look at this. You got a lot of pro-vax people who are very upset with him. It's the Republicans who ought to be upset with him. It's the Republicans who ought to say, are you kidding me? Are you trying to tell me that there is going to be a court somewhere that says that you cannot prohibit mask mandates? How have we turned this upside down? Finally, and I'll stop with this, Jeremy Clarkson of Top Gear has outraged the cancel culture by saying this. He said, I think politicians should sometimes tell those communists at SAGE, that's their scientific advisory group in the UK, I think they should tell those communists at SAGE, that's exactly what they are, to get back into their box. Let's all just go through life with our fingers crossed and a smile on our face. I can see that Boris Johnson, doesn't want to open it up, and he wants to shut us back down again. But if it's going to be 4 years, and who knows, it could be 40 years, or it could be forever. Well, if it's going to be forever, let's open it up. And if you die, you die. If you don't understand that there are innumerable risks in life, you are dead already. You are dead already. I'll just close. I said I was going to stop with that, but I want to close with one last thing. This is from a supporter who went to a great deal of trouble. There's a limited amount that you can put into a Zelle contribution. And so he broke up his contribution into 8 sections so he could give me the short message. And I really appreciate him doing that. So I want to thank him and honor him by reading this. He said, it's okay to say my name. My name is Bill Tarleton. He says, I'm your student because you teach with words like Jesus and liberty and the Constitution. I once was very close to the master. I'm finding my way back home, partly because I hear him in you. Jesus' truth is indelible. It will always find the light. You are the light on the hill, sir. Thank you for being his vessel. He says, I've listened to many independent conservative hosts. His truth, Christ's truth, though, comes out of you like a breaking dam. Sorry, I had not read this whole thing, or I would not try to read this on the air. I'm sorry. He says, I check sources and I tell everyone that will listen the truths. I would not tell you to stop, but I know you that you can't. He said, I would tell you to stop, but I know that you can't. I miss being that close to the Creator, and I've decided to stop running from my sweet Jesus, instead to turn to Him. So that's it, folks. And again, it isn't if we die, we die. It's we will die, and we need to understand and get a perspective on that. And this is one of the things that God has given us an opportunity to do this last year. Thank you for listening.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.